Good morning. I would like to call to order the regular monthly meeting of the Board of Respiratory Care Examiners at 9:01 on Thursday, March 21st, 2019. Just as a reminder, this is a professional board setting, and we ask that when we are speaking, you not be speaking over us, whether you're at the table or in the audience, and when you're up at the table, we will give you that same courtesy. We're going to start with introductions, and my name is Tracy Kagan, and I am the chair of board.
Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Dr. Leslie Easley, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Jeff Todfer, executive director.
Assistant Attorney General Becky Schenecker, attorney for the board.
Kathy Stone, licensing administrator.
We also ask that you make sure your cell phones are off because we are in an area now where we get service, so please make sure those are off. Everyone heard what Kathy said about CEUs. If you're here for CEUs, you need to remain here for the entirety of the meeting, and then Kathy will do a roll call before we adjourn. Okay, we are going to start with approval of the consent agenda, and that would be items 1 up to and including H. Oh, well, you've got letters and numbers. Yeah, okay. Oh, I guess 1 through 2H. How about that? We have a motion and a second for approval. All in favor of approval of the consent agenda say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. All right, you're going to see me do some skipping around on the agenda today. I actually have a reason for that, so don't be alarmed. We will start with C1. And the board will call the case of Lorena Cota, case 2018-RTE-0088. And we are under 3C, which is consideration and action on investigation of possible unprofessional conduct. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Is it going? Yeah, you're good. I'm having a technical moment, sorry.
I apologize.
There we go.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, and I see you are represented by counsel. If you could just state your name for the record.
Lorena Cota. And I'm Catherine
Barnard. Okay. Barnard.
Great, thank you.
I'll help you. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0088. The respondent in the case is Lorena Cota, represented by counsel. RCP Cota has been licensed since February 16th of 2012, and that license is set to expire on August 20th, 2019. Last reported employer we have on file is Apria. There's no complaint history and no public criminal history found. The complaint in this case alleges that RCP Cota has failed to provide follow-up care for her son by not completing required ventilator assessments or maintenance. Specifically, there were no checks completed in October of 2018 through November of 2018. The RCP Cota did reply to the complaint allegation letter within the appropriate time and basically explains in summary that it's been a long time patient. The doctor's orders changed in September or October of 2018. I think the checks were either every three or four months, and that had changed from the prior 1 or 2 month checks. I don't have anything further unless the board has any questions, and the respondent and attorney are here to present to the board.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again for being here. Because we are at an allegation stage, you will have 5 minutes to tell us a note different.
Oh, no, I had a reminder also.
Just for the board members and for the respondent and counsel, can we make sure that we're referring to the patient by initials only during this process?
Okay.
And as far as the person who filed the complaint, is the patient's mother.
Okay.
We need to make sure that the confidentiality is maintained.
Okay. You will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know about this case. After that, the board can have conversation amongst each other, but nothing back and forth with you. Okay. The floor is yours.
And the support. Essentially, overall, we believe that their response, completed by Ms. Cota, is pretty comprehensive. We did want to note a couple of things, and I do have some additional documentation. First and foremost, I want to provide the maintenance schedule for the maintenance information for this machine, the type of machine that was created that the patient is using, just to note that the schedule is actually a little bit different than what was alleged. And so that you'll have that for your reference. I also want to include a correspondence provided, and you'll note at the bottom 1,750 hours for 17,000 hours. Replacement of the blower, and then a different schedule for some of the maintenance. And then what was alleged? I just want to point that out that we Ms. Cota was on target with the current maintenance inspection element of that. The other thing we want to note is that the mother did request correspondence by email to the email address that Ms. Cota was responding to. So, requested and complied with. So that's the reference as well. Otherwise, we've covered all of the allegations, and I do believe that if you refer to the response, it's pretty comprehensive to the issues here. That's all I have to cover on this.
Okay, thank you. Okay, board members, any conversations amongst ourselves? And if you guys want to see the maintenance schedule, here that is. Give us just a second so everyone can see the documentation. Not your flight, take your time.
Where does this come from?
Can you just explain where that came from? That's from the manual that comes with the Trilogy ventilator.
How do I know that?
At the bottom of the page.
It says cleaning and maintenance, chapter 7. I refer to Trilogy service manual. Mm-hmm. And that's the device this patient was on.
Yes.
Is that the most up-to-date servicing that was... How do they schedule appointments? Because I'm seeing multiple documents, progress notes that say patient was not home. Do you call and schedule appointments prior to going home? I mean, it seems like a waste of, it's inefficient, in my opinion, for
right, patient.
The respiratory therapist to drive to someone's house and they're not there.
We have an answer to how they do that.
I've got just a quick question. So has this ever been done with this patient?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we replace the ventilators every 2 years or the patient hours, whichever one comes first.
I'm trying to figure out what the significance of submitting this today is.
It's up to $1,500.
Because the one that he has now ran out of time?
No, he's still
the complaint that believe states.
So my understanding of the complaint was that it was twofold. Number one, the...
It says right here, because ventilator is always changed out every 2 years or
$7,000.
Okay.
So then I think they're showing that to say it's not 7,000 hours, it's 17,500.
Okay. I guess I'm just not understanding the relevance of that. So they changed it out early.
No, they didn't change it. And the mother is saying they should have, and she's saying my document says no, we shouldn't have yet. That's what that's for, and that's my understanding.
My memory was that the complainant was not happy because she wasn't getting supplies in the form of some tubing to the vent. She had two different kinds of tubing because she was using the traditional vent, and then she had a second piece of equipment that was mobile, and that was the main complaint. Am I wrong on that?
Our understanding of the complaints that were different, it was a lack of consistent checks in the timeliness manner, and then the vendors would be changed out a certain time period, and that we had not been done. So,
okay.
As far as this goes. There was some allegations that they had requested some vital DME, but that seems to have been resolved. I don't know if that was specifically to this CODA.
So page 1700, it states on September 11th of 2018, I'm not getting my supplies. It is your job to advocate for us. I need you to create an M number. And the objective statement is check the ventilator to ensure settings and alarms are still set properly. So did we get the supplies? I'm not sure what this means by subjective statement. And if I'm not getting, is this RCP CODA saying I'm not getting, or is this the family saying I'm not getting?
Is that your signature?
It's the family.
Oh, that's the family?
That's the family saying.
So it's like a soap note. This mm-hmm. is the S is the complaint from the what the patient or family is saying.
Yeah, I think I would just document that. That's making that statement.
Right.
And is this patient discharged from care now? That happened in January?
I'm understanding the SD card issue.
It sounds like you've got to be able to go in and just evaluate the card for hours of use and things like that, and that they weren't able to get in and do that.
Right.
Because then you know when it
and
needs to be changed.
And why weren't they able to get in and do that?
It's like multiple times they weren't home.
A couple of times it says patient not home.
And I believe the patient's mother would not allow the card picked up. I think that was part of
that was in there somewhere else.
In that statement, yeah. Right, on the 11th, it says that the mother refused to permit a download of the unit's SD card.
I mean, she can't force her way into the house. That's a whole other issue.
Correct.
So. And our options at this level, Jack, are?
You may dismiss if you have no findings of any violations. You may issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern, or you can offer a consent agreement for any type of continuing education, remediation. If the board feels that if there is a violation that rises to disciplinary action, you can send it to an informal interview so there can be questions asked and a back and forth of specific allegations and facts within the complaint.
Okay.
Patient safety.
mean, according to her documentation, several days she was there. I agree. I kind of wonder how appointments were made, but that's neither here nor there at this point.
It says Lorena always calls us on the phone. No calls for over 2 months. Then in December, 4 emails. We do not live with email.
We have the email saying use this email.
Right.
It seems like maybe that she's also more mad with the care, with the Mercy Care and Apria.
Right.
Yeah.
Than it being a provider care issue.
Anyone have a motion then?
I make a motion to dismiss.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second for dismissal. Further discussion? Anyone, Michael? All in favor of dismissing the case of Lorena Cota, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Thank you for being here. Back up to 3B, which is consideration and action on informal interviews, and the board is going to call the case of Matthew London, case 2018-RCE-0082. Good morning. I see that you were also represented by an attorney, so if you could each introduce yourself, I'd appreciate that.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Madam Chair, Jessica Miller, legal counsel for Mr. Matthew London.
Sorry. And Mr. London, we ask that you raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Go ahead, John.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0082. Respondent is Matthew London, holding the license number 32919. This license was originally issued on November 13th, 2018, set to expire on May 17th, 2020. His last reported employer with us was University Hospitals, and there's no complaint history or public record criminal background found. RCT London was terminated from a travel assignment at Arias Medical Group for failing a pre-employment drug test. They filed a complaint on December 4th, 2018, stating that RCT London had been recently terminated from his travel assignment at University Medical Center in New Orleans for testing positive for a controlled substance. The test was administered per University Medical Center New Orleans on November 20th of 2018. RCP London did reply to the complaint within the appropriate time frame. He stated that he did have a prescription, and he has since sent copies or pictures of that prescription bottle to the board in response to this complaint. He does not have any prior complaints or actions with this board, and he was invited by email, regular mail, and he is here today. I don't have anything further to share.
And just for the board's information, for the respondent and counsel, because this does include information about prescription medications and diagnoses and possible treatment, the board or the respondent can exercise your right to have that discussion in executive session pursuant to the A2 exception.
Okay. Thank you for being here. We're going to give you some time to tell us whatever you want us to tell us about this, and then after that we will likely have questions for you.
Okay. Sort of feel like it's warranted to give some background as to what happened so that I can put everything in context. I had been working in Ohio prior to coming. I had been living in Arizona, graduated, got my degree in respiratory care, and accepted a full-time permanent job in Ohio. I separated from my wife at that time. I went to Ohio. She stayed out here. After about a year and a half out there, I decided to try to come back, work here, and see if we could reconcile our problems with our marriage. When I returned to Arizona at the end of October 2018, she advised me that she wanted to get a divorce. And so I have a prescription for clonazepam, which I have had for many years. I take it only as needed. And on the particular date after this happened, I went and visited one of my friends to kind of talk about the situation. I was experiencing a high level of anxiety because of the situation. I did not have my own medication with me. And my friend offered a diazepam tablet. I know that it's definitely completely wrong to take that medication that I wasn't prescribed, but that is the only thing that I took and that I've ever taken. I know that it was a similar class of medication to what I am prescribed, but I know that that's not an excuse and that doesn't make it right. But that is what happened and why I did take a medication. That's, and to my knowledge, that is what I tested positive for, was another benzodiazepine.
Okay, thank you. Board members, questions for Mr. London or his attorney?
I was looking for the actual report.
What report?
The results.
Staff has been unsuccessful.
Okay. I think last month
we asked for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's a corporate MRO company. And when I finally got to fax number and telephone line, we sent a subpoena, but we have not gotten any response back.
Okay. I believe that that my client was also directed to take a urine drug screen, which he did, and I believe that it was only one day's notice at the direction of the board.
Correct. We're also asked for a drug screen to be completed. We did that. He complied. The results are in your packet.
What page is that?
Has the use of medication ever impaired your judgment, response, or decision making while at work?
Definitely not, and I wouldn't take that medication before going to work. So I've never gone to work or been at work while under that medication at all.
What particular reason is it anxiety? Did you take the medication?
Correct.
For? So, if you were at work and became anxious, it would be something you would handle until you got home.
I don't even carry it with me. It's in my medicine cabinet at home, and that would be the only time I would have it or have access to it. And it is not something I would have in a medical facility or outside of my home, basically.
So I got to ask, what were you thinking when you accepted, even though it was in the same class of medications?
Well, I clearly made a bad lapse of mental judgment, but I was in extreme distress because of what was going on with my personal life. I really wasn't thinking very clearly, and all I really wanted was to just, you know, not be so distraught and upset. I mean, like I said, if I had carried my own medication with me, that would have been sufficient. But it's not something that I ever even carry outside my home, so.
Okay. I heard you guys over there say 1650. Okay.
Board member Crawford had asked for the results of the drug screen. They were negative.
1615.
Okay. And I just wanted to direct the board to that page.
I thought you were saying 1650.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's also since had two pre-employment drug screens that we assume were, well, we know we're both negative, but I don't think that the board can assume we're both negative because he's still employed with those agencies.
Where are you employed right now?
I currently work for Banner. I was hired by them approximately 3 to 4 weeks after the incident with Arias. I did take another drug screen for them, which I passed. I took the one that was requested by the board, and then I've been offered a job with Oro Valley Hospital and took a drug screen with them, and that was over a week ago, and they've not contacted me with any comments about it.
I will say that the board appreciates you responding so quickly to the drug screen, because we don't always have that, so we appreciate that.
Absolutely.
The one that we requested. Okay, board members, any other questions? Thoughts?
So he has a prescription for benzo. Mm-hmm. He failed a pre-employment drug screen.
Because mm-hmm. a different class showed up.
He took a medication that wasn't prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But has taken 3 drug screens since then. 1 for us, 2 for hospitals. Okay. Anyone?
Leaning towards a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
The board is concerned that?
The consumption of a drug that was not prescribed.
Okay.
I believe historically the board has done letters of concern, or they have dismissed if they were able to provide an actual prescription for that drug.
For the other one?
For the actual drug that showed up on the screen. But historically this board has considered letters of concern in this case.
Okay.
But there's no ongoing concern.
So a motion or a thought?
Oh, it's a thought.
Okay. Does anyone have a motion?
I'm leaning towards. There's obviously no history or anything. Being here is a positive factor. I'm leaning towards dismissing it, and I think he probably will never do this again.
Never.
Okay.
So I would make a motion to dismiss.
Okay, so we have a motion for dismissal. Do we have a second? You do not have a second, so your motion dies for lack of a second.
I'm going to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, the concern being that he took a drug that was not prescribed.
We have a motion for a letter of concern.
I'll second that.
And we have a second to that. Any further discussion?
You said non-disciplinary?
Mm-hmm. Non-disciplinary. All in favor of the letter of concern, non-disciplinary letter of concern, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
So helping with the language, the concern is that
you took a drug that was not prescribed to him. You took a different class of benzodiazepines that was not prescribed.
So the letter of concern will state that
the board is concerned that the respondent consumed a medication that was not prescribed to him. I have language.
I can't wait.
Thank you both for being here.
Good luck to you.
Thanks.
Right here, are we good with C5 now?
Is Mr. King?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You're right. It's on.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to go back to KC, which is consideration and action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of Michael Montessa, case 2019-RCE-0002. Good morning. Thank you both for being here. If you could introduce yourself and your counsel as well, please.
I'm Michael Montessa.
And I'm Scott King.
Great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2019-RC-002. Respondent is Michael Montessa that holds license number 4416. This license was originally issued on July 16th, 1997. It's currently active and set to expire on September 25th, 2019. Last reported employer was Honor Health Scottsdale. I did not find any complaint history with the board, and there were not any significant criminal background concerns when I completed the search. The complainant in this matter alleges that RCP Montessa provided inadequate medical care and treatment that resulted in a permanent harm to patient SM. That's an exaggerated summary of the complainant's letter. because the complaint filed a very lengthy two-page letter of allegations and the situation that had happened at the hospital. They're available in your materials for review. The respondent did reply within the appropriate time frame through his attorney and basically states that he's not responsible for any allegations, and I believe this one states that he did not even see the patient during the patient's stay at the hospital. So there's no disciplinary action on file with the board, no complaints, and they received notice of this and are here to address the board if necessary.
Okay, thank you. Because we are back in the allegation stage, you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know. After that, the board will have conversation amongst themselves, but not back and forth with you.
Okay. Simply put, my client did not see or see or have any interaction with patient SM or her husband, and basically we're denying all the allegations because nothing ever happened. We never had any interaction, so we just asked the board to dismiss the case.
Okay. I was looking in the materials for, because I know it's mentioned on here that I believe he said he didn't even work one of those days in question, but we don't have a schedule or any kind of patient record or anything yet, do we?
There's one or two pages within the patient record that we received that the respondent's name is on there with dates and times. And I had asked respondent's counsel a quick question about that and basically said that he may have been in charge of the care as a supervisor in the case, but he never necessarily saw the patient personally. I'm trying to find that page number, but when I originally looked at it, it looked like a summary of an electronic medical record summary of who saw the patient when. There's two lines on there. It has his name, has a date and a time, and it was like 1 or 2 minutes that sheet reflects. So we did not go any further into that as far as investigating it or trying to find out if it was just a electronic medical record login, or we didn't get any of those informatics, anything like that.
Did we get any clinical record for this patient?
We did not receive the subpoena that we sent to the hospital. Has not been returned. All the medical records that are in here, we received from the complaint.
And I just briefly, in terms of the names in the case, my client was working as a manager, and so it logs in the fact that he's a manager, but he had no contact with the patient at all, or her husband.
I have nothing in my materials that would indicate that RCP Mutessa. I'm curious to know how he got named.
It sounds like they got a copy of the medical records and found his name in the medical records and named him.
And I can amplify that. I've been representing other physicians and nurses that didn't even see the patient, and doctors who never saw the patient have been had board complaints filed against them by the husband.
By this patient?
Yes.
And so they just sort of passed down the list of everybody on there and filed them.
And actually, he didn't list my other client by name, just by license number.
Wow.
And the medical record we did have, there are other respiratory therapists that are on the patient charts that we didn't receive a complaint from.
Yes.
So the complaint was difficult to communicate with on the front end, and there might be one or two outstanding requests from me as far as specifics. But you have what I have at this point.
Okay.
Based upon the information that I have, I'm going to motion to dismiss.
Second.
excuse me, we have a motion and a second for dismissal. Any other conversation? All in favor of dismissing the case of Michael Montessa, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you
for being here.
Who's the second? Thank you.
You're good. You're good.
Okay.
And then next we are going to call the case of Genevieve, help me with the last name.
Pates.
Okay, thank you. Case number 2019-RCE-0001. And for the record, if you could just introduce yourself and counsel again, please.
I'm Genevieve Pates.
And I'm Scott Cate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, yeah.
This is the same.
Documentation. Okay.
Yes, got it.
So same information, but Jack, are you going to do an overview or should we?
I'm unable to find my report right now.
Okay. So we're just going to just jump right to you. And again, you'll have, I'm just going to go through the same thing. You'll have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know. After that, we can have conversation with ourselves, but not with you.
Okay. My client did check patient SM's oxygen device on June 15th, and then again she went up on June 22nd to check it. Patient was no longer on oxygen. In terms of the allegations, she denies all the allegations. I don't believe she actually spoke to patient SM, and she didn't have any interaction with the patient's husband.
Okay. All right, so on this one, board members, we do have some charting, it appears. 2432 is
what
I'm on.
Okay, that's right. Did RCP participate in the transport of this patient to ICU?
No. That was on the 17th.
So it's like the 15th and the 22nd.
She had a hypoxic episode on the 17th. And respiratory case illness are on the 15th and the 22nd.
So it doesn't look like she's involved in that at all.
Uh-huh. All right, looks like two very normal respiratory interactions with this patient.
She appears that she was checking oxygen.
Yeah.
No, she was on a cannula.
She was on a cannula, yeah.
And then the second time was on Lumir.
Yep. Okay.
Based on this information, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss this case.
We have a motion and a second and a third, really. Motion and a second for dismissal. Any conversation? Anyone? All in favor of dismissing the case of Genevieve Pates, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Okay, I'm going to go back up to 3B, and we are going to call the case of Paul Gordon, case 2018-RCE-0085. Paul Gordon.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I want to give a quick update before we get into specifics on this case. The board had asked for 3 days of patient records at the last meeting. Those records came in at 7:30 this morning by email, and I don't have the password to open those materials was the patient medical record number, which I don't have. So I sent out a couple of emails this morning. I'm not sure if they responded to my email. So the records that you asked for are not available in your materials. They may be upstairs, but I would have to go see if we have access to it at this point in time.
Can we make a motion for a 10-minute recess?
You don't need a motion. Are we going to do that 10-minute recess so you can go up and check?
I'm happy to do that. I don't know if you want to continue on with the agenda while I'm doing that to be efficient, or...
Are you okay if we move on, Frankie, with him not being
sure.
Here?
I do not need to be here. I was thinking only if there's an executive session of which I have an issue, then I need to be here, but otherwise, no.
The board can just add a 10-minute recess.
Okay, so we're going to just take a 10-minute recess so we can maybe get some information on this case that we requested. So hang tight. There you go. 10-minute recess. Okay, I'm going to call us back to order. I'm going to ask that you give us a few minutes because we just got several, literally thousands of pages dumped on our laptops here. So give us just a minute to look, find what we're looking for.
I'll have to recuse myself from this case since this is a patient that I was involved with treating.
Okay.
I'll be available for any general medical questions that I could answer. That'd be fine, but nothing specific about this
patient. Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Gordon, just give us a couple minutes to locate the days we're in search of. If anyone finds it, holler.
It's on page
907?
904.
What do we see on 904?
930.
So I've got physician orders that start on or referenced on page 92.
Except that assessment on page 904 for 1130 is not by this one. Correct?
Yes, 1129.
Yep. Time or date?
907. Date 1129 at 2131 is back to patient.
Yeah, page 904, 905, 906, 907.
Wow. It really
is. Is she still married and driving?
Yeah, keep going. It's actually 11/26/27/28. Go on page 9/17/16/17.
I see. It's going to be printed.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
It goes backwards.
Okay. All right. That does help. There we go. I see it now. Okay. All right.
Physician progress notes start on 1880.
1880.
For that date. And go through 1893.
And has anyone seen anything about a rapid? Yes.
No, it's a change in code status. Yeah, so status code is page 1275. I don't know what the date is on the status. It just says status post
for the next
time.
Yeah,
they
have that. So we need to put temporary dialysis.
But that was not
the case. No.
that's going to help us
you
with the allocation.
You had asked for items, progress notes, respiratory progress notes, nursing notes.
Someone wanted a
something
patient.
Something about x-rays.
Yep. So we're in formal, so he's going to have the opportunity to talk. So why don't we get started with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jack, let's just start from the beginning. If you can summarize the case, then I'm going to let him give his talk. Maybe that will kind of help us with the clarity of what exactly we can find in those 4,000 pages.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018, RCP-0085. This case... respondent in this case is Paul Gordon for license number 11977. This license was originally issued on March 21st of 2018 and is set to expire on March 21st of 2020. Last reported employer was a Brazos West campus, no complaint history, and no criminal history found when searched. RCP Gordon was terminated from his employment at Abrazo West Campus on December 4th of 2018 for inadequate patient care and substandard performance. The board had received a mandatory report from the respiratory therapy supervisor on December 7th, notifying the board that the respondent had been terminated. The termination paperwork states that the reason for termination was failure to meet patient standards and unsatisfactory performance slash conduct. The description also detailed that there is an allegation that there is an insufficient response to events that could result in patient harm, and the hospital described some of the training opportunities and coaching they had gone through since his hire. RCP Gordon did provide a response within an appropriate time frame, and he provided a detailed three-page response of the incident that occurred on November 30th of 2018. So your materials for your review. In summary, it states at the time that these events occurred, I had been a respiratory therapist at Brazo for approximately 1 year and 9 months. This was also my first known job as an RT, and that the extent of my job responsibility extended to general floor duties on 3rd, 4th, 5th floor, and occasionally 2 north. I have never been assigned to work in ICU, ER, or nursery. He goes on to detail some of the equipment, some of the things that led up to the incident that was reported. In closing, he said that not all lessons can be taught in a classroom or read a book. Some of life's best lessons come by learning from errors we make. As an RT with less than 2 years into the profession, my whole work experience at Abrazo has been one of continuous on-the-job training and improvement in basically all areas that require interaction of RT skills and services. I enjoy my work as a therapist and I pride myself on bringing relief and comfort to my patients. I've paid a huge cost for my mistake with the loss of my job. As always, when I know better, I do better. I'm hoping that this mistake is not going to end my career in respiratory therapy. I don't have any further questions at this time.
Okay.
The board does. And RCP Gordon is here for the informal interview.
Okay. Thank you for your patience as we got all this material. We're just going to give you a minute to... Would you raise your right hand, please? You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. We are going to give you a few minutes to add anything you might want to add about this incident, and then the board will likely have questions for you.
I'd just like to say, in response to some of the things that was said, in particular, this training, additional training, basically what they're talking about are competency tests, written tests that you take home and look up the answer or know the answer and hand back. It gets checked out by your lead and given back. And that's for everybody. It's not special for me. RCP, one of the therapists that's been there 20 years that was new was taking the same test. And I did them all the ones that they gave me, and that can be verified by the director. I can give her name, but she sat there with us and we went through, she would say, okay, let's do this. Let's have it back in a couple of weeks. We'd go back, meet in a couple of weeks. The supervisor would say, yeah, everything is good. We move on to the next test. And we completed everything that was assigned to me. And she can verify that. So I don't know if she's saying when she says some of the tests weren't completed on time or incomplete. The one in particular for trait care was like four questions long. I remember the first question was like, what are the four indications for tracheostomy? And there are simple questions like that, questions that would be on the, like, maybe therapist's multiple exam. So, I mean, there's nothing complicated about it. So I just want to make that clear.
Okay.
For training, additional training.
Okay. And in regards to the patient care concerns they had?
Which one?
Wrong suction catheter being used, wrong mm-hmm. equipment being used.
Yeah, the wrong suction catheter has to do with the inline suction catheter. As I said, I found out, I didn't know at the time what was going on, but there are two different inline suction catheters for tracheostomies. One is in use with a mechanical ventilator, which, like I said, I don't work in. The mechanical ventilation is only used in ICU. So when I seen the one that said for tracheostomies, I pulled that one, and I had done this before. I guess the first time I got lucky because they're both in the same bin, you know. So that was a problem. And then when I got this one upstairs the second time, I was going to change out the inline suction catheter. It didn't work right with the T-piece that I had. So that's how I found that out, and that's what I put on him. And after I put it on him, probably about 2 or 3 minutes, he kind of started grimacing, and I was like, oh, wow. So I took it off of him immediately. He didn't sit there and suffer with it forever. But that's when his...
You took the suction catheter off. Is that what I heard you say?
Pardon me?
You said you took it off. What do you
mean? Yeah, I took it off. I took
what did it? The suction catheter?
Yeah. I took the inline suction catheter off his tray.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And... And that's when his, because I noticed his oxygen saturations would start wavering back and forth in a really weird pattern. Like I said, it would be like in 95 or whatever, then it would go down to like 75, 85. But then it would come back up. It was just weird, and I couldn't figure out what's going on there. And that's when I concluded that perhaps he might be aspirating again, because that was the whole point of my being there, the fact that he had aspirated, because the nurse had double the timing on his feeding tube until he aspirated. By the time I got it, he had aspiration all over him. I had cleaned him up and was in the process of actually closing it down. I thought I was done, you know what I'm saying? And when this happened, so.
And were you involved in a rapid response with this patient?
A rapid response was called at the end because of his saturations going back and forth, and I couldn't figure out. The nurse was in there. She said, let's call a rapid response because of the weird pattern of his saturations coming up and down. And I had never really seen it. I've seen saturations go down like in a rapid response. Usually they come up slowly, you know, as you give them oxygen and things like that. This one would stay down there for a minute. Then it would come back up. And it would be like 95. And it would say, okay, we're thinking, okay, he's good. He's good now. We've taken it off. He's coming back, you know. And that's what was going on with him.
And once this rapid was called, what was your part in that?
My part was to try to figure out what to do. And like I had said, my mistake was this. Not having an AMBU bag in the room, not having a syringe in the room to inflate the cup. And that's what I was saying. When you know better, you do better. You should always keep an AMBU bag, suction catheters, and a syringe with a trach patient that should be in the room. So that was the lesson that I learned.
Okay.
Was this patient seen by another therapist prior to you taking care of the patient that day?
From the previous shift, because I work nights.
Yeah.
So I assumed that it was, because usually trach care is ordered.
No, I'm not talking trach care. I'm talking this patient was seen by therapist prior to you coming in and caring for this patient?
Right? No. Not for my shift.
No, I'm not talking about your shift.
The shift prior.
I'm saying in general, the patient was seen by another therapist prior to you that you got a report on, right?
Yes.
Okay, so are you saying that there were no supplies, adequate supplies, or ambu bag provided from the prior shift to the room prior to you getting there?
Right.
Okay. So it was inadequate, you know, it didn't have stock.
Didn't have
an ambu bag. And when you grabbed the inline closed suction catheter, did you say that you removed the suction catheter from that closed inline suction catheter? Is that what you said?
I'm saying that because of the aspiration, the patient's mother was concerned about the suction catheter being contaminated because he had previously gone through a bout with a pulmonary infection on aerosolized tobramycin. Maybe a week or two before that, he had just kind of gotten that cleared up. So she wanted everything changed. And she's a very vocal advocate for her son. So if you don't do it,
I understand that. What I'm trying to figure out is if you have an inline closed suction catheter and you break that circuit, what do you think is happening with the whole process?
Well, the suction catheter doesn't really have a lot to do with your saturation. It's just what you're going to use to go in and just, you know, remove sputum or whatever from that time, the negative pressure. But as far as changing out a suction catheter, yeah, you can take somebody off a suction catheter as long as he still has oxygen coming from it. And he had...
I have a question. So, when you arrived, you got a report. You started your shift. You walked into this patient's room. Walk me through what you do on arrival in this patient's room.
Well, when I started shift, I think the first time that I seen him, I do his aerosolized medications, okay?
In line.
In line. And I don't do trachea at that point because the policy there is that medications have a window.
So let me just clarify. Is this patient on an aerosol currently, or are they on a ventilator?
Aerosol. No ventilators.
Okay. So they have OmniFlex. You put them on a T-piece. You're putting the SVN into the T-piece, correct?
Not at that point.
Okay.
You asked me when I first arrived, what do I do?
Yep.
Okay. I give him his medication. And I believe he gets budesonide or albuterol or whatever, you know. And I'm done with him at that point. Of course, I do, you know, assessment, all that stuff.
Walk me through your assessment.
Okay, so I look at the patient when I come in. I look at his skin color. I look at him generally overall. I look at his breathing. I look at the excursions of his chest. I look at for use of accessory muscles for breathing and things like that. I look at his vitals. I look at his oxygen saturation. I look at his breathing rate. I also take him. I listen for breath sounds.
When you listen to breath sounds, what'd you hear? Remember?
He's usually, that was 11:30. I can't really remember what on that particular time that I heard. But if I hear secretions at that time, you know, or...
If you heard coarse breath sounds, because that's what was documented by the person.
Okay.
Over carefully.
Okay.
If you heard coarse breath sounds, walk me through what you would do.
Probably would suction him.
Okay. And did this patient have a suction catheter at the bedside or connected to the tray?
He had an inline suction catheter at that time.
Okay.
First rounds.
Yep.
Okay.
What point do you provide tray care? Or did you?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Is that during first round, second round?
Between first and second.
And when you do trach care, do you change the trach itself? Do you ever remove the trach?
No, I don't remove the trach. I change the inner cannula.
Okay.
Okay.
And after you perform trach care, do you reassess your patient?
Yes.
Okay. And when you perform trach care this time, do you auscultate the breast?
Yes.
Thank you.
Board members, has anyone seen the respiratory charting in all these pages yet?
Yes.
Can you tell me the page you're on?
I would love to.
Because you're frozen.
Correct.
Has anyone else seen that?
I guess not.
So page 935.
935 is documentation from 1123 moving forward by you look for respiratory documentation?
For, yes.
It's a flow sheet, yes.
Okay.
About the airway, about the vitals.
Yes, okay.
What page did you say?
921.
But it looks like for the date we were.
They go backwards.
They go forward.
So here's my, I'm looking right now at a physician progress note on page 2794, where the pH is 7.18, CO2 of 51. And then if you scroll down to 2798.
Yeah.
On page 2798, there's a subjective note written by the physician that says, patient was seen and examined, RN and family at bedside. Patient had a rapid response earlier on, this is 1130, due to respiratory distress. Also appears the trach may have been dislodged, which has now been corrected. So my question for RCP, Gordon, when you provide trach care, I want to make sure that you're re-auscultating breast sounds and assuring that you're seeing equal aeration or hearing equal aeration. In your onboarding, while you guys are continuing, I'm going to keep asking questions. In your onboarding and competency evaluation, were you ever given competency on suction and airway clearance?
That may have been part of the package. I don't know. There were different subjects for this competency test. One was, like oxygen administration. There may have been bits and pieces of some.
Okay.
I can't remember. There were so many, you know. We just did them and turned them back in.
The documentation that I read through of your competency had things from aerosolized medication to CPT, EZPAP, etc. One of the things I did not see in there was suctioning.
Yeah, that's not a complete list. I think it said that. What they gave you, you got that from Human Resources, I believe. And they said that there was more something in there, so you only got a part of that. This is a big, thick thing. I mean, it's like, I think we did it over a month, maybe a month and a half. The different subjects every 2 weeks coming in. And they didn't even, that's not even all of it, because they didn't do the ventilators, because I don't work on ventilators. So that's a whole different section that would not.
And you did not have competency on ventilators, or you did?
No, well, I qualified for them, check off it from school, you know what I'm saying? In the 18 months that I was there, or whatever it was, I never worked in ICU, and that's where ventilators are used.
So your employer never tested you on ventilators?
No.
You never worked in there.
I never worked in that. I was about to begin, because I had been there long enough where they kind of wanted to start moving people from general floor after they paid their dues to venture out and go into ICU, maybe ED.
Did you have any specific training on trach care, trach changes, trach ties, cleaning, etc., prior to getting a trach patient?
Through clinical, when I was in clinical?
No, I'm talking about clinical. I'm saying as an employee of Abrazo West, did they give you any training on trachs prior to giving you a trach patient?
Not formally. The trach care that I learned from fellow coworkers. You know, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. If I had a question, I'd ask them, how do you do this? How do you hook up aerosol? You know, how many links of corrugated tubing do you need on each side, you know, to collect in the collection bag for the waste, you
did
know?
Did you ever witness any kind of trach change where a trach was actually removed, reinserted, changed, cleaned, how the ties are put on and changed safely?
Not a trach, but then a cannulus. How to change the trach ties, how to clean around the stoma. And that's pretty much what you do during trach care. We don't change the trach in and out itself. That would be done by a physician.
So So if a trach pops out or comes out, you're going to hit the button and wait for a doctor to come and change the trach for you?
Well, they usually keep another one in the room, always a trach. But in a case like that, I would suppose that one would try, because that is your airway. But, you know, I've never been in that situation where I've had to, where a trach popped out, because I'm very careful when I do my trach care. I'll do one side at a time. I always have it hunkered down, you know. So.
Okay, so really you didn't have a lot of exposure to changing trachs or anything like that, because that's something obviously you guys don't do.
Right.
Okay.
So the page that you were looking at, Alan, that said the rapid response was earlier that evening.
Yes.
That was saying that the rapid response was on 11:30.
Correct.
But it doesn't have a time.
But if you look at on page 904 of what we have, 904 and 905, that looks like the respiratory charting for 11:30. And that is not this RCP.
Correct.
So I'm wondering where that information is charted, that shows that there was a rapid. Doesn't appear to be any respiratory charting that discusses that rapid.
Correct.
Okay.
And that may be on a code arrest form that we just don't ask them.
Or we haven't gotten to yet, because there are a lot of pages here.
Those are paper forms at this facility, the code arrest form, so they're not in.
And they don't get scanned into the chart?
They should be.
Okay, and they may be. There's a lot of pages. But
the rapid happened on the morning, just before the shift was about to end, I think, of 11:30. But the charting that I probably would have done on that patient for his trach care would have been probably the 29th in the evening.
Well, there's documentation of 11:29 by R.C. Gordon's documentation of trach care, 11:29 to 2100 hours. Mm-hmm. And then that's the last documentation we have prior to the rapid. Other therapist or
by him, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And that's on 908.
Yes. Oh. 907, 908. Which is two.
So it sounds like this is a complicated patient with some pretty significant medical history as far as sepsis, et cetera. I'm a little bit concerned as to, I'm interested in knowing kind of what occurred post rapid response when you had blood gas of 7.1. Do we know if this patient got transferred to the ICU or?
It's my understanding that he did. Once I did after the rapid, I was told that I never saw him again. But when I did go back to talk with my supervisor, I asked about it. It was one of the first things I did. And I said, is he okay? And she said, we don't know. We're going to the test or something still out. Because I was concerned by him aspirating if perhaps he had caught pneumonia. Or, you know, or something like that. And I thought she said that the test and that were still going on.
On 29/94 is a chest x-ray dated 11/30/06/30. Slight improvement in aeration, amorphosis in the right base. Tracheostomy pick liner in place. Trachea is midline, part is normal.
Left side of the pleural. Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Yep, 6:30 in the
That's
morning.
That's 6:30 in the morning of the day of the rapid.
Right.
All right. Based upon what I've heard, I don't feel that you were provided adequate education or competency on tracheostomy care or on suctioning.
Why would you say that?
I don't see documentation of competence based on the materials that I have. And based on what you told me in regards to care, what I heard you say was that you're your experience was provided to you, meaning via observation of other colleagues or
employees. No, I've done trick care on him many, many times.
I don't think you heard what board member Crawford was saying. He said you were provided adequate training on trick care.
By your employer.
Not that you, okay?
Oh.
There's no documentation in your HR file that shows that they provided you with the competency and the quizzes on those.
I would have expected your employer to have done that prior to letting you treat a trick aspect.
I know the trick care competency had like four questions and they're pretty general.
Okay. What I heard you say when I asked you about your assessment seemed appropriate to me. I would have expected a respiratory therapist with an artificial airway to assess their patient by auscultative breath sounds. I would have expected a respiratory therapist to have suctioned an airway, especially an artificial airway, especially if you're a coarse breath sound. My concern when I see patients with tracheostomies on room air or on cool aerosol is always going to be mucus plugging, et cetera, which may lead to respiratory distress with an artificial airway. So when this patient had a rapid response, one of my first thought processes is, did this patient have a mucus plug? Or is there an obstruction of some kind that would prevent them from fulfilling a full respiratory capacity? What I would have liked to have seen in the charting was documentation of you suctioning the patient. I heard you say you did, but I don't see documentation of that.
Well, I didn't have time to even document that.
I understand that.
Because I was actually just cleaning him up from aspirations.
Let's talk about the aspiration. So this patient had a feeding tube, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay. At any point was this patient had a feeding tube obviously running prior to you coming in to see the patient for the first time?
Yes, from what I understand, it was still running when I came in.
And was this new? Was this feeding tube recently placed?
No, I do believe that it's been there, is that right, Dr. Reason?
So my question would be, did we reassess a KUB or an X-ray to make sure that the feeding tube was in the appropriate location, or do we have an order? And you probably won't know this answer because it's primarily a nursing-driven protocol. But one of the things, if it is a new tube, would be, is it in the appropriate location? Or did the tube go into the trachea? So those are the things I would think of when I see patients on feeding tubes with artificial airways.
Well, from what I understand, what the nurse told me when she came and got me, she said I had the timing on the feeding tube, it was doubled. And that's what led to the aspiration.
So the patient was getting essentially bolus doses.
Yes, and that's what led to his aspiration.
Got it.
1031 energy tube was placed.
No documentation of
KUB. Yes.
Or placement being checked.
Correct. That was on 10:30.
Doctors say no suction for MGT use for residual tube feeds.
That's on page 2975. It looks like it was a PEG and not an MGT.
So do not style, okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it was a PEG.
All right.
Any other questions?
No, my thought process is that the responsibility of the department is to make sure that clinicians have all the skills they need in their toolbox. I don't see any documentation of thorough trach care.
Great.
That he was provided by his leadership team.
Agreed.
And
the only thing that we have is the email we got from the employer that states that education, and it's very broad.
Correct. I would love to have seen specifics, you know, more than just a four-test question. Love to have seen clinical competencies.
Well, competencies, right.
Critical correct. Thinking.
At the bedside, not just on paper. Which I don't believe he was given an opportunity to demonstrate.
The only clinical competencies I was given were for how to add heat to a ventilator, heated circuit, which I don't work on ventilators, how to set up a blended oxygen and air for infants. Like they use a blend of they blend the oxygen and the air together for them, which I don't work in a nursery or nothing. So I mean, they were kind of pointless for me.
Are you currently working somewhere?
No.
You're not working anywhere right now?
No.
Do you have the desire to ever work on ventilators or with ventilators?
I wanted to work on ventilators. I actually asked to because it's part of my training. I've trained on four or five different ventilators and, you know, different molds and, you know, APRV.
Did you ask for any additional training, like on trick care or anything like that prior to seeing this patient? Did you ever think that maybe your training wasn't adequate enough?
No, because I felt that I was doing what I was supposed to do. I mean, you go in, you clean them up, you clean around the stomach. That's all that the trach care involves. I was doing what the trach care required. When I go in and I do trach care, all you're doing is cleaning up the patient, suctioning him, looking at the site. If you find redness or something like that, you report it to somebody else. You know, if it's something unusual, you clean them up, you change the drains pad, drain sponge.
No, I understand.
You know, I mean, that's
trach care.
One per shift.
I'm just wondering if there were any additional things that you might have required, like if the trach popped out and you needed to then provide an emergency airway. Did you know? Did they show you? Did they talk about exchanges? Did they go over any of that with you?
No, so if it was a case of unconscious ineptitude because I didn't know what to ask. I thought that what I was doing was fine.
I appreciate that.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what? That's what I was looking for. Okay.
Here's my thought process. Kathy was just showing me ABG results from 27th of October. Thank you. Or November. This patient, in my opinion, based on the documents I've read, I think this patient aspirated, which led to the hypoxemia. I don't think that this patient's course of events that occurred on 11:30 were contributed by you. I think that you did what you were educated to do. I do think, however, with that being said, I do think that there is opportunity for you to further your education in artificial airways and airway management. I'm going to make a motion that we have required CE in airway management, specifically tracheostomy care. Maybe three CEs, artificial airways and tracheostomy care. And we close the case.
Okay. That's a motion.
That's a motion.
I'll second. So we have a motion and a second for CEUs. Done in what amount of time?
Within 60 days.
Okay. Motion and a second for CEUs within 60 days.
Three CEUs.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I don't see it as his fault. I think it's the employer's fault, so I agree. I think the three's... I was looking at six, but three's okay. because you could extend into that, maybe EQ2 as well as trach. But let's tackle the thing. But I agree, because I just don't believe it's his fault.
Okay. All in favor of the three CEUs for artificial airways within 60 days, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Nay. But the motion passes.
So, clarification of the motion to vote. This is that you're voting to issue a non-disciplinary order of probation.
No. Continuing education.
Can we do that without probation?
Yes, absolutely. You can tap on probation and it becomes disciplinary. And it would need condemned due to consent because you cannot order probation.
We're
in an informal interview, so.
And you can do CE if it's non-disciplinary, it's not through probation.
Okay.
It's just an order for CE. You can do it.
But it's not to be a consent.
No,
it's okay.
Ordered.
So I'm going to order 3 hours of continuing education.
It's a non-disciplinary board order for 3 units of continuing education to be done within 60 days, in addition to any required CE for renewal.
What happens if it's not completed?
Number 6.
We come back to the board as a formal hearing.
As a formal hearing, then,
yeah.
If okay. It's not completed.
And if it's not completed, it would come back to the board. The board would have to open up a new complaint for non-compliance with an existing board order, and that would make its way through the process over again and go to hearing.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are you good with that, Jack?
That. Yeah, the whole discussion. So normally when you've ordered it, you've had it pre-approved by the executive director to make sure that the course is correct.
Yes, that would stay.
Would you like pre-approval as well?
Well, I was trying to clarify the intent of their motion, so.
I would like to know that too. So.
Yes, you are correct. That
okay.
That would remain in place.
Okay.
And I would expect you to approve.
Great. Thank you. So do you understand what the board just did?
I think I understand. You're saying that I need 3 CEUs
yes.
of approved
right.
Trait care.
Right. So the board has issued a non-disciplinary order
yeah.
where they're mandating that you get some continuing education. You don't have to take notes. I'm going to send you a document that's going to describe this and set it all out. So when you get that, if you have questions, you and I can talk as we have. And then you go find a course, you're going to submit it to me. I'm going to say yes or no, or maybe this won't be better. You go do that, and then, so.
Would you prefer online, or?
We'll jump that hurdle when we get there. Okay.
And I want to clarify, this is in addition to the 20
yes.
CEUs that are required.
Yeah.
That will be included in
it. Okay, thank you for coming down today.
Okay.
Thank you for appearing. Very much appreciated.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to say a 3D, which is consideration of action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Kelly Candor, case 2018-RCE-0070. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
You printed them all out.
I'm old school.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0070. Respondent is Kelly Gandorf, holder of license number 11901. This license was originally issued on March 16th of 2006, currently active and set to expire on January 19th, 2020. Last reported employer was Honor Health of Scottsdale. No complaint history and no criminal background found when I searched. RCP Gandorf was terminated on October 2nd, 2018 in violation of Honor Health HIPAA policy. Description basically states that RCP Gandorf had posted a patient x-ray on its social media website and that had gotten reported to supervisors and HR at the hospital and then she had gotten terminated. RCP Gandorf has reported to the complaint. The allegation was in the appropriate time. And I want to add that this was reported to us by both RCP Gandorf and the hospital about the same time, so she did self-report it to us. I don't have any further questions. By way of some additional information, the board had reviewed this at a prior meeting, had offered a consent agreement for decree censure, which was a disciplinary action. Staff sent that out. And then in the intro, I've had one or two conversations with her, and she really didn't want to sign the consent agreement because of the implications that are reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, the action on her record. She doesn't feel that that is appropriate for the fact pattern, and that's why she came down here today to discuss this with you.
Okay. Thank you for being here. So you will have some time to tell us whatever you want us to know, and then we may have some questions for you.
Do I have to tell the truth?
Yeah. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
She remembers.
I've been watching. So on the date, yes, I did submit that picture to a closed vascular access website. There is a, it was an educational site. It was not an open and public forum. No information was given, not even a she or a him, on that picture. My Facebook profile is private, unless you're a friend. And even then, it nowhere does it state where I work or anything like that. And, you know, yes, I did post it, but I do not believe that I violated the patient's HIPAA at all.
Okay. Board members, I believe last time we spoke about this, I'm trying to find the picture, we discussed that it had a serial number, right?
The device identifier.
The device identifier. Yes.
But you cannot see any numbers on it.
There were numbers that were visible on there. It was the second half of the unique patient identifier.
So the picture that is in your material is on 1686.
I have a question.
Yeah, you can ask questions.
Did you have permission from the patient or the patient's family to post that picture?
No, sir.
Right. What was your thought process of thinking that that was okay then?
It was an extremely interesting and difficult pick. I actually posted it because I thought maybe it could help other people within our group, within the vascular access group, in tech placement, because it was such a difficult fit. And it actually ended up not being a ticket.
I mean, you can see where numbers are on 1686.
Can you make them out?
No.
I can't on here. Was it a better picture on social media? I don't know the answer to that.
And really the issue, I think, for discussion is as far as HIPAA goes, any photographs, and it's not limited to the facial features, any photographs of that patient, was one of the patient.
And, I mean, justifying it by saying it's a closed group, you know, somebody always knows somebody who knows somebody, that whole 6 degrees of separation, that's not a good justification to post something on social media.
I took it off the website myself before I knew I was in trouble.
Why did you take it down?
Because instead of helping out and trying to figure out, like, the pick itself, everybody wanted to blame the doctor for not placing a central line, and I didn't think that was appropriate, because ultimately it's the doctor's decision who gets a line and how. So I didn't like the way that the post was going, so I deleted it. It was only up for, well, that doesn't even matter.
How was this brought to your employer's attention?
Another person who is part of the website, they put it up there.
So that's kind of my point, is somebody knows somebody who knows somebody.
I understand. I understand that now it was wrong, but...
Do you believe it was a HIPAA violation which did?
No, sir.
Why?
No identifying marks. It was not out in public, not for bad matters, but no, I did not.
You and I had a discussion about the group.
Yes, sir.
and I had asked, well, who's in the group, you know, and so forth, and
it's other professionals, other respiratory professionals, other nursing professionals. How do they let them, how do they verify that these are actually professionals and not like a government account? They have to go through
There's an admin.
There's actually three admins.
Right, but what does that admin do to verify that you are who you say you are with the credentials you say you have?
Like a license number, or what, if they look you up?
They look us up.
So you had to provide your license number when you applied for this group?
No.
On Facebook?
No. I don't believe I did. I have the bylaws if you want them.
But my point is that were other x-rays things being posted here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you know if any of those were reported to anybody?
No, sir.
Is the group still operating?
Yes, sir. I am not any longer a part of that group.
I mean, regardless of whether or not it's a closed group, I mean, I'm on a closed verified group where they verify your license number, but you still have to, HIPAA still applies, right? Because the other people that are in that group are not privy to your patient's information. So when information is posted, there is, you have to think, okay, what is HIPAA, right? So if there's a serial number on it, that can be HIPAA. If you even say that this is a current patient in the facility where I work, even if you don't say where you work, the question is that HIPAA?
Well, and the other thing is, if somebody knew where you worked, reported this to her employer, and, you know, it's supposed to be the safe space, clearly there's restrictions, but it was reported to her employer, they did identify you, and even if those people in the group were able to identify you, they don't have access to that patient unless they're a part of the treatment plan. So, I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong.
And if there are other RTs that are in the group, and this was posted with an identified number, and it has been reported to the board as required. So so I would want to investigate that to make sure that we're treating everybody the same way, instead of singling out one person in a group that got terminated because of something. There was motivation behind reporting this to HR. I don't know what that is, but if this is going on in this group, why isn't the other stuff getting reported?
Well, if the concern in this is that there's a serial number on there and that's the patient identifier, then maybe there are other photos that are posted where you say, and I've seen this, where they say, what does everybody think about this photo? That's different when there's no patient identifiers on there, no indication of where that patient is an inpatient or being treated. Is different, then there actually isn't any HIPAA information on it. But if there, I thought the concern that we had was that there's a, you know, potentially a visible serial number here.
Right. I don't think the posting of the X-ray itself is not in
it's
question.
It's the serial number.
It's that there's an identifiable mark on there.
And it was in addition to the last discussion. It was in addition to the other information that was posted with the
correct
photograph,
three
was,
the family,
the age of the patient.
Where was it?
Yeah. I didn't think so. Just said the
pacer is 3 years
pacer
old.
Is 3 years
maybe
old.
It's not. Eventually,
the doctor is going to place the central line with his patient.
Yeah, the family's on the way. I think there was a
patient,
patient
on
hospice
until
family
from out of state can get there.
And I think this was one that we had heard with multiple other cases where there was HIPAA violations, and so we followed the.
This one was different. Though.
Different.
It was different. But
it
was
wasn't
still
part of that group, right?
Yeah.
But it was the same facility.
But it was the same facility, and
why did you refuse to sign?
I'm not sure, Board Member Crawford. She sent the consent agreement back in to the board.
No, I'm asking why she refused to sign this document.
Oh, I think so. I thought you meant the previous
no.
Number. Okay.
Why did you refuse to sign? And let me get the title of this document.
Notice of dismissal.
Notice
are
of
we?
Dismissal.
What page is that? 16-8.
Yeah. Because I actually quit.
Okay.
And then they sent it to me. So once they sent me that paper, I called the board and said that I had been fired.
You quit based on this situation?
Yes, ma'am. There's a lot of problems.
and that was kind of like the straw breaking the camel's back.
What day did you quit?
The day that I got called in, which was October 2nd.
So you never saw this document?
Not until they sent it to me.
Okay. Are you working now?
Yes, ma'am, please.
I just don't know what it looked like on...
I can't remember the original picture.
On social media.
Oh, we don't have...
I thought it was clearer when I printed it out. I don't have the printout with me.
Because that was... My specific concern was that the serial number is identifiable. So when you see images like this elsewhere, there is a black box over the serial number so that there's not any patient identifier on it.
The first time we looked at this, though, there must have been a different picture because I was able to make out numbers
I think it was in the system. Now we're looking at it converted to a PDF. We're trying to pull up the actual system.
It was a better picture. Anyway, I could make out the numbers the first time we discussed this.
I remember that being my concern, was the numbers.
Do we have a physical copy of it?
No, and that was a discussion at the early part of this because it had been deleted from the Facebook group. I couldn't access the original. I wanted
which we
the
wouldn't have been
post.
Able to see anyway if we're not in this.
So I have a question about this Facebook group and other. I heard you say that this wasn't the first time pictures have been posted in terms of the spirit of education. And so, have other x-rays been posted with Pixmaker?
There have been many pictures posted with all kinds of things. As to specific with a pacemaker, I'm sure there has been. I can't tell you how many.
And how do you know how many members are in this group that you were a part of?
No.
Lots.
2,000?
Okay. Ballpark number. That's a big group. And I'm assuming with that number of individuals in that group, it's not just your employer, but it's a nationwide group, a citywide group?
Nationwide. Or actually worldwide, I'm sure.
Okay.
It's the original printout. That's beyond my capability. Did you take so tell the board how did you post this? Did you take a picture of the x-ray with a phone?
With a phone.
You just adjust the contrast.
Do you still have the picture?
I do.
How'd you do that?
Do you have it with you? Would you like to share it with them? Is it going to show the number on the...
I can't pick out a number. There's
a copy of it.
She's got it on her phone.
She's got it on her phone.
I just, my concern is that someone who can just change the contrast from dark to light, and like, which I can't do, and I accidentally wrote all over my picture. And now I can't see it.
It's yellow now.
Yeah, thank you.
I think generally working for medical facilities, you have to pull your phone out to take a photo of patient's information.
Also,
not a good idea.
Can I share this?
I don't know.
I
can be seen. Yeah.
That one doesn't look as good as.
Yeah, I think it's actually better in the printout.
In this printout here.
Yeah, I think the contrast on the printout is darker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you do with that information?
There's a printout of it.
You can identify one of them.
It's better.
Is this the actual picture that you took?
Yes,
it was. That was
uploaded. I mean, when you're going through what could we have, you know, if the photographic image that are not limited to images of the face and any other characteristic that could uniquely identify the individual, besides all the normal stuff we know of, like name, date of birth, you know, and stuff like address.
So I'm less concerned about the number on the PACER. I'm more concerned about what she wrote in addition with the picture. Because if I'm working there, I'm going to know this family is, this patient's on hospice, the family's waiting for arrival.
And can I just confirm on the HIPAA violations list, doesn't it also list the date of procedure?
It's any information that they can be used to identify who the patient is.
So, in addition, it also, any
other characteristic that could uniquely identify.
And then there's also a specific provision about any dates of service, because mm-hmm. they know where you were, that you treated this patient, you can narrow down down to what procedure they did on what day it was.
What you say is that, you know, you can't say, like, this is currently a patient at my facility, because that uniquely identifies them as somebody at your facility. So when photos or patient scenarios are posted online, they have to be posted in a way that this is not somebody that you're currently treating. You could just say, I found this image. What do you think of this image? That would be fine. With a black box over those numbers.
Right, without the commentary of, you know, Dr. Wilson's central line is glad you're not to hospice patient. I think there's just too many things.
And I think that's the only piece that bothered me was all that other.
Right. And someone did identify her as an employee of that hospital and
right.
reported to her employer.
That's one thing to put up an image that has, you know, that says, what do you think of this PIC line? And then let people say, oh, that's not a PIC, that's a midline. But all the other stuff identifies that as a current patient, and specifically, even if somebody doesn't look at this image and know that patient because they're not caring for that patient, they may know that there's a patient on hospice on that floor that they're waiting for family to come in.
The only other thing to consider is that I think in the other cases of the HIPAA violations of this mm-hmm. facility that we heard on this in the same board meeting, those individuals had retained their job, and in this case, she didn't. So,
which you heard her also say that there were some other things that may have been contributing to her termination or to her wanting to resign.
And I think there's a lot unsaid in that area, because I know that her and I have talked about it on the phone, and it could be mitigating, but it's not something that I've looked into and investigated or asked any other questions about.
Okay. So we are in this position because the last time we saw this, we decided that a decree of censure was appropriate. At the level we are at, we offered it in a consent, and we said if not signed, we'd go to an informal interview. So we're at the informal interview stage. If we were going to the option of that same decree of censure, at this point, it's no longer the consent. We're just,
you can order
it. We're ordering a decree of censure.
And that may also still do a letter of concern if you believe that her, that it does not rise to the level of discipline. You can assign CE, non-disciplinary CE. You can order probation.
All of the options are correct.
Yeah, all of everything except
for
revocation
and suspension.
If you believe this rises to the level of revocation or suspension, you may send it to formal hearing.
Okay, which I do not believe it rises to that. That's just my opinion.
Agreed. Is there anything else?
Does anyone else have any questions for her?
Or that she would like to add?
Anything else you'd like to add? No? Okay.
This is your, like I told you, this is your opportunity to discuss this with the board. So I don't want you to feel that you haven't said something that they need to hear. And I don't want you to feel that you haven't been given an opportunity to kind of state your case. So that's kind of why we got here. So that's why I'm asking now, because I think the board's getting close to making a decision.
It was never my intention to hurt the patient or put out information that would have come back to the patient.
I believe that. I don't think there was any malicious intent.
No,
I think it was posted for an educational purpose.
This is something, however, that not just this facility, but that all facilities are becoming more aware of and very strict about to make sure that there is nothing, even without traditional identifiers, posted on social media about their victims.
And I think they said
And it's new for all of us, right? It's like a new world that we're all navigating.
Yeah.
So I don't think that most people that post, there are a small few who do it in a malicious way, but I don't think that most people are. But the question is, you know, what do we do with that?
Well, I think that her employer has made a statement as to how important and how necessary it is to protect patients' information. She lost her job over it.
Okay, so does anybody have any motion?
Question I'm struggling with is, this rise to the level of disciplinary action, considering what actions have already occurred with her. I'm stuck between the non-disciplinary letter of concern and a decree of censure.
Right. So I feel like HIPAA is talked about and talked about and talked about and talked about, and it's pretty straightforward, in my opinion. And I completely agree that you did not do it with any bad intention. Nonetheless, there were identifying information, whether they were numbers or markers, put out there to a site of however many people that are not vetted by anything other than you decided you're the admin for this group. And maybe you ask a question to see if they're a healthcare provider. But my guess is somewhere in that group there are non-healthcare providers, because that's just how it goes. My point is that I think things that can be identified are that's serious. Mm-hmm. It's a serious violation. Mm-hmm. And HIPAA is not anything new to any healthcare provider.
The implications are very far-reaching for when you violate HIPAA. Very far-reaching. So when anybody does something that violates HIPAA, it's something that you really have to think about. And I agree with Alan. I don't know whether this rises to the occasion of... I think you've suffered a lot already, but I still think that the opening line bothers me a lot. Do you want to play a game?
I'm a child of the 80s.
Well, I'm an elder of the 80s, and I'm just thinking that that's a little, you know, it's funny. I didn't say it wasn't funny. I mean, it can come off as humorous, but, you know, I don't know what the intent was trying to lead to, you know, and it kind of bugs me.
The intent of that statement right there was nothing more than humor. Find the pick line, find the line, find the tip. That was it.
So the situation was funny at that point, to post it, to ask where the line is, and...
It wasn't funny, no sir, but if you know me, and I know you don't, but I do have a sense of humor, and for me, it was like a tagline, like, come look at my picture.
Yeah, I mean, that's not my concern. That is very common amongst healthcare professionals. I mean, we've used humor to... you know, deflate the seriousness of everything that we face on a day in, day out. So I don't have an issue with that. My issue is that there could be a partial serial number that's visible, and that it's in the comment, it indicates that this is a current patient that's being treated, which is unique, and that this patient's family is coming in from out of state. Those two things are unique to this patient. And identify this as not just a, hey, let's take a look at this and have a discussion about this interesting picture that I'm posting, to this is a current patient of mine that I'm having, I had this struggle with, and, you know, looking back now, can we just find a little humor in it because it was a difficult thing for me, you know? And so that changes it. That changes it to some unique things about this patient. And unfortunately for me, that makes it a HIPAA violation.
The only thing that I would add to that is, even if it was a group of vetted healthcare professionals, it would still be a HIPAA violation.
Correct. If everybody in there is a licensed respiratory therapist, it's still a HIPAA violation.
It's still not their patient.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so does anyone have a motion?
So we're The two things that we were talking about were doing a non-disciplinary letter versus doing, and in the past when we've had HIPAA violations, what have we done? Like, what has been our
disciplinary decree of censure? It depends how far back you go.
Right.
This board has issued letter of concerns in the past for HIPAA violations, but each one has a little different fact pattern.
I think we should be consistent.
The last three or four you did were all from the same group, and the seriousness just—it was so widespread.
Right, they were all accessing the same chart.
You took the disciplinary route in that case. Yeah. Once again, these are all case by case bases.
Right.
So it is
I just want to be somewhat consistent in what we're doing with the level of seriousness.
Can we attach continuing education hours to a letter of concern?
I would prefer you do one or the other, because the letter of concern says your conduct does not rise to the level of discipline. What the CE says is you did something. We're not going to issue discipline, but instead we think we can fix it with a non-disciplinary CE order. So I probably wouldn't do both. The CE order in and of itself will have all your findings of fact, conclusions of law. That is within the retention schedule is part of their licensing filing.
So you can do a non-disciplinary CE order for HIPAA?
Absolutely, you can. And,
I mean, there are specific classes about HIPAA and social
media. Absolutely, there are. And there are two... the other thing is that your letters of concern are not posted to the website. If anyone asks for them, they are public record, but they are not posted to the website. Your CE orders are posted. That's the only other thing. I don't know if that matters to the board, but...
Okay, so if we just say, I want to order that she get, say, 6 hours of continuing education, 3 on HIPAA, 3 on ethics, have 90 days to do it?
You could craft an order, absolutely.
We could do that?
Mm-hmm. And it would have the same retention schedule as a letter of concern, so if you're concerned about things being in her file for the future, your letter of concern and your CE orders have the same exact retention schedule.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for CEUs. Any further discussion on that?
Are we going to make them specific to social media or just HIPAA in general?
I heard HIPAA and ethics.
I heard HIPAA. If
any expansion on HIPAA with social media ties to it, absolutely.
I would think that most HIPAA classes now would include a component of social media. I would think, because, I mean, it's just so prevalent.
Okay. The same rule being that our executive director would approve those courses.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
With your permission.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we have the motion and the second. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Nay. The motion passes. I
think no. So do you understand?
Yeah.
Non-disciplinary order for continuing education will get an order from us in the next 10 days or so. If you have questions, give me a call. Thank you for coming down today.
Thank you.
I don't have to agree with that. All right, staying in 3B, we will call the case of Robert Boggs, case 2018-RCE-0079. Oh, excellent.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0079. Respondent is Robert Boggs, holder of license number 12284. RCP Boggs has been licensed since February 9th, 2017. That license is active and is set to expire on April 12th, 2020. This case involves a termination for employment at Banner Health that occurred on November 26, 2018. The allegation for that was inadequate patient care and falsification of patient records. basically, in summary, the allegation states that RCP Boggs did not see a patient that was assigned under his care, and that he recorded false information in the chart. RCP Boggs did respond to this complaint within the appropriate time frame, and basically states that the patient had an altered mental state and that he was unable to provide care when required to that patient. He states that he had recorded a patient chart. Treatment was not appropriate at this time, and that's what he selected in the drop-down menu. And the board had reviewed this at a previous board meeting and had asked for additional patient records, which I believe are now included under the medical records for NW.
Okay.
I have anything further.
Thank you. Mr. Boggs, we're going to give you a moment. Thank you for being here, by the way. If you could raise your right hand, please. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
And we're going to give you a moment to tell us anything you want us to know, anything additional, and then after that, the board will have some questions for you.
Essentially, what Jack was saying is close. What I had done is accidentally, like on the Dropbox menu, I put patient refused, and that's where the whole issue came about, is that I didn't actually see the patient, but I had meant to put it not appropriate at this time.
And why wasn't it appropriate at this time?
The patient was screaming and yelling. And, like, during my first rounds, I went to, like, my assigned area and was there for at least 20, 30 minutes. The patient was yelling the whole time as they were making rounds. And so it was, like, patient's hostile.
Was this the first time you had treated this patient?
Yeah, I've never seen the patient.
Or been assigned to this patient?
Yeah.
When a patient is not appropriate at this time, what is your process? What do you do?
Usually I would just chart not appropriate at this time. Typically, you can comment as a reason to why, which I didn't do, but typically that would be it. There's a lot of different reasons why it might not be appropriate. One like that, patient, if they're in the restroom or is unavailable, things like that.
So you probably have making a comment and documenting additional details would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm very good about doing that now. Like this whole issue escalated to something I don't think it should have at all for like just the simplest misclick that anyone could do. I mean, it's an alphabetical order, not appropriate, patient refused, they're like right next to each other.
When a patient is not appropriate, do you ever contact the physician or communicate with the nurse saying, hey, I understand that they're throwing feces across the room and I don't think I want to go in there right now, but if they need a treatment or a care of distress, you can call me at any time. Do you ever have those conversations with the nurse?
Not with the physician, especially since I was working nights. You wouldn't call them to tell them that their patient didn't get a duo in there because they're hostile. Typically a nurse.
Did you in this case?
No.
Why? You said you typically would.
Months ago, I don't remember, honestly. It's possible the nurse wasn't around, they're on break, whatever. I just can't remember.
This patient is on a lot of therapies, mm-hmm. respiratory therapies, requiring aggressive pulmonary toilet, lung expansion therapy, acetylcysteine. And did this patient end up getting treatment from you later in the shift?
No, because after that, I was placed in SWAT, which is like a hospital resource position. So, I mean, it's known that I actually do my job and, like, take care of my patients if they would go and have me put in place as the one people call if something's going downhill.
Okay.
So,
but
I did not know. I passed the patient along.
Okay. But this patient did receive a treatment later in the evening, right?
That, I'm not sure. The whole issue that, like, arose is the person that took over for me. I know they went to see the patient, and there was the patient's family member was in there, and that's where it escalated, and the person I passed along to was new, and she kind of panicked and called me, and she's like, I don't know what to do. So I was like, no worries, I'll take care of it. I called my manager and told her exactly what had happened. And that's when I went through my charting with my manager at the time and realized that's when I...
And who was your manager?
At the time, her name's Andrea Spencer. She's a newer manager to me. She wasn't my manager the whole time.
When you went in the first time and you checked the box and they were both together, was there anybody with the patient? Anybody, family members or anybody?
That's where the issue arose, is that there's a family member in there. The reason it escalated is that I didn't go in and visibly look at the patient, and that's why they're saying like I falsified it by saying patient refused when that's not what I meant to put in the first place. So the issue that this got escalated to here is that it says patient refused, but I had told my manager, you know, I didn't go into the room with them screaming, and that's when the issue occurred, essentially, because they're saying that I falsified information by saying that the patient refused when I hadn't even seen the patient.
So
that makes sense.
I have reviewed 90% of this patient's chart, which is thousands of patients. There is clear documentation from the nurse that this is a non-ambulating patient who suffers from pain. There is documentation of confusion and disorientation, agitation and restlessness the same evening that he was assigned to treat this patient.
Thank God. Like, I didn't have any malicious intent. It's not like I was just like, oh, I don't care about this patient, I'm tired, you know, like, I don't want to do my job kind of thing. Like, it just didn't seem appropriate at the time.
Well, I was just wondering, because you said he was screaming the whole time you made rounds or whatever. Is it possible he was screaming at whoever was in the room with him?
I don't think so.
Oh, is he
from screaming? What I remember, it's not like, it wasn't even like sensical screaming. There's noise. It's not like a patient screaming, oh, I'm in pain, or help me, or I'm, you know, it's just nonsensical, loud. Bah.
Okay, so he was just randomly screaming.
Is it common to not go into a room and at least visualize what's going on to the patient, or talk to the family member that's there and just chart not appropriate?
I wasn't aware that there's a family member in there. Maybe sometimes, I guess. I mean, also, I know we have to do a lot of crazy things, but I don't feel like I need to put my safety in jeopardy for a hostile patient like that. It's a little different now. Like, in the position I'm in, those are the type of people I work around, and that's what I signed up for. So I always check on them. But there, I mean, because as far as I could see, with the patient screaming, they're obviously breathing. I didn't actually go in and assess. But they're clearly, you know, to be screaming, they're breathing.
So you don't review charts before you go in and see patients?
I didn't know they had a laundry list of, like, the medications, like, talked about. I don't remember the actual reason for the patient being there, but I don't think it was, like, an actual, like, they had an actual pulmonary history. They had pneumonia or something like that going on. You know, an 8-year-old patient or something along those lines that was old and sick.
There are a lot of patients that patients scream, so I just don't buy it that you just say, oh, I heard them screaming and I'm not going to go in the room because you think that they're hostile and they're a threat to you. Like, I don't buy that. I'm sorry. Like, you got to be able to go in. I mean, if the nurse says, yeah, we've got security in the room and this patient is swinging at people, that, you know, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't want you to put yourself at risk, or anybody else for that matter. But to not, you know, go in the room or grab the nurse and go in the room together and find out if there's a way that you can provide this treatment to this patient safely, I mean, I don't buy that it's the right thing to do to not even walk in the room.
With them already hostile like that, to go in there could just escalate the situation further.
How do you know that they were hostile if you didn't go into the room?
How do we know they're not?
How do you know that they are if you didn't?
If you hear someone screaming the way this patient was, you would assume the same thing.
You assumed.
That's true. But it's a safe assumption.
I disagree.
Are you working someplace now?
Mm-hmm.
What was the date of this?
I don't remember, but I think it was the 26th.
November 20th, 2019.
I mean, I can see where you can select something, you know, incorrectly, and that's easy to do. I mean, my issue is different. I don't think you should write not appropriate without making an attempt to
visualize. That's why I also mentioned, like, the new job. Like, I wouldn't do that because that's the environment I work in. I mean, if I could go back and do it differently now, would I have? Sure.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying, like, I'm not at any kind of fault.
My experience has been that if a patient is agitated or restless,
mm-hmm.
I would communicate with the nurse to say, hey, it's now an appropriate time.
Do they, would they calm down for a treatment?
And if not,
yeah,
call me and I'll be happy to come back.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit, I'm in agreement with Dr. Easley that I think I would have managed the situation a little bit differently. But
the issue here
that's
with
looking
the,
at it hindsight in 2020.
Yeah.
Do I think you falsified a record? I don't believe you did.
No.
At least I don't think you intentionally falsified a record.
I agree. Like I said, my issue is different. It's not the issue here. So.
If it does make you feel better, I agree with what you're saying now. Obviously, I would do it different. But, I mean, it's
like, as a physician, I can't say, hey, I think that patient's hostile. I'm just going to skip them today.
Right. I mean, I work around all hostile patients.
Never mind. Patient screaming, I'll just see him tomorrow. I don't need to say that, right? Like, we have a duty to provide care. So, yes, there are times our patients are literally, swinging and whatever, and so I don't physically examine them, but I'm going to document that. So,
yeah.
My issue is, like I said, it's different. I think you need to go and visualize your patient and talk to the nurse. Do I think that you intentionally falsified information? No.
How many times were you to see this patient that night?
I think they were Q6. I was originally on the floors that night, and then I was placed this slot, which is a resource. I wasn't to see that patient anymore.
Yeah.
But with the charting record, I think it was Q6, and there should have been another person that went and saw them. And that's where the issue arose from, and that's when I called my manager.
So did you chart the same way for each of that without going to the room, or...
What's that?
I don't.
She would have only been seen one time by me. That's the only time. Is that one time that would have?
And there is documentation that a therapist did come in after the nurse made the complaint by a family member.
Okay. Any more questions? Anyone have a motion?
I think I'm going to make a motion.
We have a motion and a second for dismissal. Any further discussion? This is
the second time we've seen him, and the first time was related to the albuterol incident. The mitigating factor in this case is at the bottom of page 80 for me, where despite some instances with character and back and forth between yourself and other supervisors, that they end up, she apologizes to you in the notes. So, I just don't want to see him again.
I don't want to see you guys anymore either. I like seeing you. This is like sort of fourth, and I've like fourth time after having to come back. I mean, the first time I was here, like, I obviously messed up. Like, I'm still a new therapist, and that was way newer. That was like a legitimate reason to be here, but I feel like this escalated and shouldn't have been brought to the boards like it did.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table. Any further discussion? All in favor of dismissal of the case, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Good luck. Don't come back.
Three strikes and you're out.
Just to be clear, that's not the law.
I know.
All right. Moving on, we will go back to 3C, which is consideration in action on investigation of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of Shakora Jackson, case 2019-RCE-0005.
Is RCP Jackson here?
From my notes, nobody else on the agenda is here.
Okay.
Is that a true statement? Is anyone else who's on the agenda present? Okay.
Yeah, you can roll with it.
I'm going to take this one. Ms. Shakora Jackson had signed an agreement not to practice, a couple months ago, while the investigation was taking place. At the time she signed the agreement, she had an active and valid license. However, the day after she signed the agreement, it expired. By operation of law, you guys have a statute that says we retain jurisdiction, and that license is essentially suspended until the case is disposed of. She entered into a second agreement for the confidential portion that's included in your materials. I will not discuss that on the record because it is confidential. One of the terms in that is that she would have to have renewed her license within 7 days now that it was expired. She has not, and the board has not been able to maintain contact with her at this point. I believe that she consented to this agreement and with a full understanding of that renewal provision that states that the board will maintain continuing jurisdiction over the probation period, even if that license is expired. At this point, because we've had no contact with her, I would ask that the board open a new complaint for basically not following a board order.
Let me back up real quick. I don't think the board has any of the original facts of this.
And I don't want to cover that. It's in your documentation. At this point, it really is it's an allegation of her failure to follow board orders.
Right. We have an order.
Yeah, so what I'm asking the board to do at this point is to direct staff to open up a new complaint for noncompliance. Also to direct staff to request a urine drug screen pursuant to the order she has signed. See if we can get some kind of compliance from her in the meantime. And then we will, based on what happens there, we can bring this back at a future meeting date for a potential revocation.
Okay.
To clarify, she is not currently licensed as a teacher.
No, she's not.
But yet we remain jurisdiction.
Because she consented to renew her license within 7 days of signing that agreement. She has not.
So just thinking this through, if we get to a revocation stage, what are we revocating?
We're revocating, basically, we're creating a public record of the discipline because as it stands right now, she's under a confidential order. There is no discipline on her record. So if you let this go as it is, which is your right, you are able to basically shelve this and say administratively close it. But there is absolutely no record. Everything's confidential at this point. So in order to lift that confidentiality, we would have to find noncompliance through a secondary case.
So I motion then that we move that we open a case for failure to comply with board order.
Thank you.
And request a drug screen.
So is your license still suspended at this point?
It's not. It's non-existent. It's expired. It's expired.
She's not working.
No.
And I will try to work with staff to reach out with her to see if we can't get her to renew and fall into compliance. If she can't, we'll go forward.
And the reason I put this on the agenda was because of this fact pattern. It's a new one. I've never seen this in 28 years doing administrative law where we've had a license expire
on the day
that the agreement signed. So
nonetheless, she signed the agreement.
She signed the agreement.
So assumingly she read it and she has to follow the board order.
Yep.
Okay. So we have a motion. Did we have a second over here?
Yes,
we had a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And just as an aside, I am working with board staff to change the language a little bit in your standard consents so that if somebody does not renew in the future, if it ever pops up again, basically what would happen is the order would become suspended until they reapplied or did a late application or got a new license, at which time the board can then bring back up this order, say you were not compliant, and reinstate the terms. So in the future, we're going to try and avoid this situation. This is a situation we just didn't see coming.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a weird one.
Okay, moving on, the board will call the case of Matthew Jones, case 2019-RCE-0004.
Chair, members of the board, this is case number... I don't need to repeat that. It was 2019 RCE-0004. Respondent is Matthew A. Jones, who was originally licensed with us on July 21st of 2011. That license is active and is set to expire on May 16th of 2019. Last reported employer that we have is Med One Healthcare. No complaint history. No recent criminal background check. There was some disclosure on the original application back in 2013, the license, about the time the license was issued. RCP Jones has been accused of threatening and harassing a family member during and after a contentious divorce proceeding. The complaint states that he is a danger to his clients and should be suspended or revoked. I'm not going to get into too many of the details here. But essentially the fact pattern is that during this divorce proceeding, there was a business relationship that broke down. There may be money that is owed to the respondent, and there may be order of protection in place. And when responding to this, RCP Jones kind of states his side of the story. And there are a lot of emotions that were going on back and forth from my review of the fact pattern. There are some text messages and one or two recordings that were submitted that may not be part of this record, but are available if the board needs to review them. I don't have anything further.
Okay. Thank you for being here. I didn't even notice you got there.
I look a little different whenever you.
So you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know, and then after that, because we're in an allegation stage, the board will talk to each other, but not back and forth to you.
My name is Matthew Jones. Raise my.
This is a big emotional
outcry is what it is. My divorce is still going on for 16 months and $200,000 of lost everything, lost my business. I've sold over 500 ventilators in the state. I play myself as a very active role in the respiratory community. I know how to fix ventilators, I know how to operate them, I know how to troubleshoot them, I know how to do everything to them. I know how to build them. I worked hard on it since I was 19 years old, and my father-in-law is the owner of the company, and I was not paid a large sum of money. My kids suffered, and I suffered, and I said some emotional things that I'm very remorseful about. You know, I hate it that I said it. I sell hospice services. I'm a very compassionate respiratory therapist. I'm setting an example to try to get patients out of homes and or out of the hospital and into homes by delivering ventilators to homes with respiratory therapy for patients to compassionately extubate and pass away in their home with their families. I don't find that as a problem with how I take care of my patients. I don't think any of my people that I've ever worked for or with have ever seen that either. I have full custody of my kids. I'm a single father. My kid's mom is gone. Just trying to make it through. That's what I'm trying to do. So, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, may I ask one question for clarification purposes? It talks about a order of protection, I understand. Does that stem from an FC, so that tells me family court.
Yeah.
There was no criminal charges against you, were there? None. Okay, so that was my... I know the complainant was claiming there's a violation of 32-3208. From my understanding...
The complainant's an attorney.
Yeah, so when I'm looking at the SC 2018, that's a civil matter, that's a family court. Mm-hmm. All orders of protections are usually done through family court. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're spurned by criminal cases, sometimes they're not. I didn't see any criminal cases that went to this, which is why I was asking you. So I don't think 3208 is on the table for this, at least. I didn't know about the patient.
It was just because of the family dynamic, and his sister is a physician assistant, surgically a physician assistant, and their brother, her husband, is an attorney, and they tried to take me for everything that I had, including my career. They're very smart people, and I'm kind of just stuck, but I have my kids, so that's what's good by me.
So, well, I guess what I'm saying, there's no duty to report this. If the concern is like a patient safety concern and the board matches that concern, then understandably you can have a discussion as to that. Mm-hmm. But there's no criminal conduct.
It just sounds like something to me that was a family issue that has nothing to do with patient care or his professional.
And he's under no duty to report civil matters to the board.
I sell hospice, I sell home health care services, I implement a lot of programs for children.
Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have asked you that.
It's okay.
No conversation.
I take that back.
No worries.
Conversation amongst ourselves only.
Okay.
Right.
Is he working now?
I don't know. It's irrelevant to why we're here.
I'm going to motion to dismiss.
Second. There's a motion and a second for dismissal. Any further discussion? All in favor of dismissing the case of Matthew Jones, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. Moving on, we will go to the case of Shamar Lane, case 2019-RCE-0006. No? Okay.
Madam Chair, the respondent of this matter is Shamar Lane, order license number 7836. License was originally issued September 20th, 2007. It's set to expire March 15th, 2021. Last reported order that we have on file was Concentra Healthcare. Do not have a complaint history or a criminal background that I can find when searched. Hacienda Healthcare reported inadequate patient care and resignation without notice to the board on January 16th, 2019. Assistant director there had reported that RCP Lane had placed an incorrect tray too small into one of our pediatric clients on December 29th, 2018, resulting in the client having to be transported out of the facility to replace the tray. An additional allegation in this is that it was the second time the same thing has happened, where an incorrect tray had been placed. RCP Lane did respond to the complaint within the appropriate time frame. She states that she did not work on Hacienda on December 29th. There may be a problem with dates there in the initial report from us from Hacienda. It may not be the 29th, but it's another date in December that was identified in the patient records. Basically states that the situation was never brought to my attention. As for January 9th of 2019, I did my job as I've always done. The very short time I worked there and filed my papers, as always, I did not, nor have I ever mishandled any documents while I was there. Everybody had access to the charts. I was also asked that day by the assistant director to work an extra shift on the following day, January 10th, and $100 incentive to do that. I've changed plenty of trachs. I take pride in being a respiratory therapist. What happened to the missing charting, she does not know. And the response goes on. I don't think there's anything else overly significant there. I don't have any. She responded within the appropriate time. The patient records are available for your review. Is in our RCP Lane is not here?
No.
So I have.
Okay, thank you. Okay, board members, that's all we've got also.
At the beginning of the meeting, everybody was asked to turn off the phones. I've turned around a couple times and seen everybody going like this. If you could please turn off your phones, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, board members. We're at an allegation stage, and she's not here, so we're limited in what we can do. And is there any information you want to see? Anything additional?
There is no documentation. Do we have schedules of shifts worked within the hospital?
I believe we do. I had a recent discussion with the assistant director there, and I believe they forwarded everything that they had. I don't think I have timesheets. I think it was in the form or something else. I'll follow up on it.
Well, and anything, other specific things that you want to see? Because I think we need to spell it out so we get the right things.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was pretty complete. I may not have the timesheets, but I tried pretty hard to get all the patient charts. And
okay.
But
so
this is her. This is her employment file. Her location chart somewhere in this.
Yes. And if they're not in your documents, I know they came in.
Is this a chart?
Yes.
What page are you looking at?
1857.
I'm not even close.
And what size trick did the
order?
Was she allegedly?
It was a 3 or something. I don't quote me.
But she claims that she never put it in.
No, she claimed that the only trakes that were there were at bedside. There were 2, and they alternated them, and that they used them up to 5 times each, and then new ones were given. So she would have only replaced ones that were already at bedside. So she wouldn't have.
No. No, but is this the date in question?
But that's what was said. 18?
Because that's what the charting shows.
No,
the charting is missing.
December.
That's what it says. Is that you have a charting?
Her documents are missing.
They were
written
charts, and she filed them, but
they
were not there. So
I called
her
to come in, and that's right. Hmm.
Make a recommendation if they go to EMR.
Do we know?
Are they closed now?
Soon. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, we do have her chart.
That's all I
decipher, but
that's all I'm interested in is I want to see days worked.
Her schedule. Okay. So I'm sorry. What was it? A motion you made, or were you just talking?
I made a motion.
Okay. To go to an informal interview.
Yeah.
And you want to see a schedule of her schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second to that?
I could easily second it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Clearly, I wasn't here. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I was just saying, do we have in here somewhere that where other people have exchanged these traits? Is it in here?
Is there a policy? Can we get a policy on trait exchange?
Oh, there you go. That references policy that we were using. Okay.
Is that common practice to reuse a trach after you pull the trach? I'm just thinking there's got to be some kind of IP concern.
I can't imagine that's common practice.
No, we'll
need to have it sit out for another 5 weeks.
Why would I take the trach out, put it on top of the ventilator, let it sit there for weeks,
and then put it back in? Yeah. Okay, so you want to see schedule of days work, policies,
and
trach changes.
It works at a long-term care facility, so.
Anything else anyone needs to see?
And she said there was an order for that. Did I hear you say that, Dr. Easley?
No. Just in the response, it says that that's what they would.
That's their practice.
But yeah, that after they were used 5 times.
Can you interview the respiratory therapy director at Hacienda and ask those questions about practices related to trach exchanges?
Reusing trachs.
I can. That's very doubtful to me, but
I
absolutely can. I mean, even if he said no, I don't know how I would ever prove that unless we interviewed more.
Well, he
RPs.
Said no, and I got a policy that says no. I'm curious as to why this RCP is following that practice then.
Mm-hmm. Or if they say, that's what we do for this patient.
Well, she showed up, if you asked her that. Well, not here, we couldn't, but we need to
go to the next level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is the motion on the table.
Right. Correct.
We're just asking what other information.
Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion? Anything anyone else wants to see? All in favor of moving this to an informal interview with those things requested, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Okay. And it looks like we'll finish up 3C by calling the case of Nicholas Navarette, case 2019-RCE-0007. Okay.
Madam Chair, RCP Navarette was originally licensed with us March 15th, 2007. That license is set to expire in January 10, 2021. Last reported employer was Western Arizona Regional Center. And we do have a complaint history. I did not find any criminal background on our recent search. RCP Davoretti reported an employment-related disciplinary action on his most recent license renewal application. And he was written up for sleeping on a job. And the response that we have received for his reason for sleeping on a job is that he basically had been going through some personal life experiences. He had received new medication. That new medication is what caused him to fall asleep on the day in question. There's a consent agreement, disciplinary order on file for a decree of censure. There's also a non-disciplinary order for a civil penalty. He was working without a license for an extended period of time, and the court issued a decree of censure. It looks back around 2017 by the case number, and then he was required to pay a civil penalty back in 2016, which he has done, and that order was terminated. I don't have anything further. I will tell you that I was very close to issuing an order for drug testing on this one. But I believe they had drug tested him, and it came back negative, even for the medication that he supposedly was taking.
How is that possible?
I think it's on. It's at the bottom of the drug report.
He's not taking it anymore.
Yes. So I was very close to issuing an order for drug testing from my authority, but I just didn't quite get there with the fact pattern. But it's close. It may be just personal issues going on in his life. I don't know.
I'm also concerned about the fact that he's been tardy 22 times for 21 shifts.
Wait,
what?
Page
2109.
Oh, here we go.
Apparently, that has not been a reason for. So a commentary on that is that this is what? Is it Mojave Valley or Canyon?
It's Valley View.
Okay. I don't know where that's located. I thought it was up
there. The Wickenburg area.
What?
The
Wickenburg area. Okay, I thought it was up on the river. It's a little more of a rural setting. So
2116 has me concerned.
Right, and the drug test came back negative after that. So he's either defeating it or there's something else going on.
So I'm going to motion that we move this to an informal interview, and I'd like to request a urine drug test.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to go to an informal and a drug screen, you said?
So what do you want? Just the regular TAM panel? Do you want a hair and drug?
Yeah, I mean, the urine's only going to tell us a few days.
Right.
Let's do a hair follicle test.
2116. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor of going to an informal interview with a drug screen, I'll say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Okay. It looks like we are moving to 3D, which is review and consideration and possible action on a prior board decision. And that would be the case of Roxana Popillo, case C003532-16-007221.
Interesting. RCP. Popillo, are you here?
want to proceed or postpone until she's present?
The request is in your materials. There's no requirement for her to appear in order to make that request. If you'd like to take consideration, you can. If you'd like to physically see her, please. It is up to the board. She doesn't have to actually.
Staff recommendation in this one would be to grant. She has been compliant with her.
Okay, well, then let's move forward with it the right way.
Chair, members of the board, staff recommendation on this would be to grant the request and terminate the order. Other than the normal terms, which were she was being drug screened at her employer, we've received all the AA logs, she's kept up to date on the prescription monitoring, and the last time I talked to her, which was I think last week or the week before, her pain management physician is starting to wean her off the medications that she was taking for pain. So there's been a complete turnaround on the behavior from day one of this. So I would have no problem terminating it at this point in time, unless you want to see her and talk to her and ask her a couple questions.
And it looks like it's due to terminate in June of this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. A motion to approve early termination of privilege.
Awesome. We have a motion and a second for early termination. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes. All right, it looks like we are at Jack.
Do we, it's 12 o'clock, do we want to move along quickly?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay. I think we're okay.
I just wanted to thank Board Member Beller for helping me with some statistics on what fee waivers that we're granting to applicants. The Governor's Office had asked for some feedback on how many fees we're waiving for new applicants, and he was kind enough to help me get something that was meaningful together and shipped off, so thank you for that. 2019 legislation. I'm going to comment on two bills. The first bill is that it's probably going to be passed, is that they are contemplating giving back temporary licenses to healthcare providers that are licensed in other states. So essentially that would reduce the time for applicants who are licensed in other states to get a temporary license to work here while they're going through their complete application process. As you know, we used to have temporary licenses. The difference is that now, if you're licensed in another state and you hold an RRP credential, you can get that temporary license here. Before, we were given temporary license to people that didn't even pass national boards.
Right.
So it's going to reduce the amount of time it takes out-state applicants to get licensed.
But they still have to be credentialed.
Right.
And they have to have the RRT credential.
Yes.
It can't be a CRT credential license in another state.
They have to meet our fundamental licensing requirements.
Yeah, okay. Is the fee the same, Jack, as it would be for renewal? Is the fee the same?
You know, right now I'm going to say yes because the statute, the proposed language doesn't contemplate anything different. Could we charge a fee for a temporary license? Possibly. We might have to write rules. I don't see us needing the revenue source to cover temporary licenses, just issuing another member of some kind to somebody that's applied with
how
us.
How long is that temp license good for?
It would be probably good for up to 210 days, which is the license overall licensing time frame.
Okay.
But it wouldn't go beyond that.
Okay.
So I expect that to pass And the other one that is going through is for licensing for military personnel that reside in Arizona. It's an expedited licensing process for military personnel or their families if they do the state of Arizona to be able to obtain a health care license here in Arizona. So that's kind of some things that are happening at the executive level that the legislature is following through on. I expect both of those to pass. They may have an emergency provision, so you would look for those to be active August of this year.
Great.
Okay. I don't have any comments on budget unless you... We're right now, it's a closed budget year. I'm expecting us to have about $14,000 left over after we get done with the fiscal year. Student conference, we were asked to participate in the student conference, which is happening in Tucson within the next 2 or 3 weeks. Standard song and dance on licensing, and I think this year I'm going to have everybody yell about to drink and drive. Every student's going to get up and we're going to do a chant about drinking and driving. Not to. We don't.
No drinking and driving and complete your CEUs.
Yeah. Because it's the number one thing that we're seeing are these DUIs and arrests and non-reporting. Do we have how many board members do we have? Do we have one?
Doing what?
Are you going
to? I don't think so.
Frank, who's
Tracy and
I just want to make sure there's not a quorum there.
She was
one of them. We got to put the notice up.
Oh, how funny.
No, I see the visual is less than four of you guys got.
Tracy.
Two? Oh, it's two of us.
Thank you.
That's funny.
Everybody would have thought about that.
I wouldn't have either.
That's funny.
Well, then we probably need to do that at the AARC conference.
We do.
No, it's a state
one. We do.
Yeah. Every time we have at least four members going to a state conference or a CE or something, we always put an announcement on the website.
Okay. Well, that's why you're here, because we would have thought about it. All right. What else?
Discussion of live CE. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask for a vote because I don't know that we need to do it. Subject to policy statement. The 100% continuing education audit has created a lot of fervor out in the industry.
Yeah.
and it has also created a lot of work for staff. You probably have 135, 140 complaints coming your way because people are failing the CE audits. And I was not expecting this. Okay, but it is happening. One of the things that is at issue is the definition of live. We have at least three national CE companies that are advertising, selling something they call live CE. Their last-minute live CE program is essentially a recording of somebody, a stand-up talk, and the participant is allowed to send an email or call an 800 number during the time that they're watching the CE to be able to ask questions. In my humble opinion, that's not live.
So when I read this, though, it says all of our courses have tracking software embedded in them that allows us to see in real time what portion of the presentation the viewer is watching.
Right.
That's live.
And they're approved.
I'll answer questions. Let me get through the whole thing. So the basis of their approval for live is the AARC. The AARC has granted these companies approval for traditional continued education. So that's where they're sprouting up. What's happening, the effect to your industry is that everybody that submits an application and figures out they don't have ethics when they submit the renewal application, or they don't have 5 hours or 10 hours, are going to these websites, getting it on the day after they submitted the application, or a week when they get notified of the audit.
No.
Well, So, but the take home is this, is that we have made a policy decision that they have, anybody that's filing a renewal application has up to the time of their expiration to be able to get the renewal, be able to get that continuing education. And for those that have been here, that's ultimately like a deficiency letter that we would be sending to them. I don't necessarily agree with that, because when they sign the application, they've said, I have all my CE. That's not what we're discovering with the audit. I need some consensus and feedback from the board about whether or not the board feels that this online watching of a recording should be considered live for the purposes of our rule that requires 5 live hours of education.
Because this isn't like a live broadcast where they can type in questions No.
It's not a live broadcast, but they can't actually...
It's recorded, so they're not even talking to the presenter. Mm-hmm. It's somebody else at this company that's answering questions. Because they only have certain live hours. So you have to watch this recording during these hours so that somebody who's not the expert who's actually giving the talk... Somebody else can answer your questions.
My understanding, to answer your question, Alan, is that they have metrics behind the CE to say that for ABC blood gases, that video was playing for X amount of time of the hour.
But they can be getting coffee and whatever.
Or it can be 2 in the morning.
Yes.
Right? If it's a webinar, you can access a webinar anytime.
But that's a webinar.
Except
that's
you can't talk to anybody because they stop talking to you at 11 p.m.
Just as a FYI for the board, your rule is R-445-209-B. And all it says is the board shall not accept any more than 15 CE during an initial licensure period or 2-year renewal period for courses or activities a licensee completed online except for live courses or activities. Completed online. So when this rule was developed, the board had assumed that there are going to be certain online types of activities that count for live. The question now is, what does the board consider? And if it needs to go in that direction, you technically can do a substantive policy statement through the Secretary of State to further clarify your definition of live.
My definition of a live webinar is that it is not recorded. They are standing up there at the podium, and I'm watching them on my screen, and they're talking.
Right. So streaming it.
Streaming. And if you ask a question, that expert is the one that's responding, not somebody else that works at this company.
Oh, Alan has a question from Mesa, Arizona about...
So anything pre-recorded doesn't count. It has to be a live stream with a live speaker and interactive abilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You go to the AERC website to get those CEUs from the AERC. They're not live. Why this is coming about.
The
AERC CEUs are accepted.
And
15 of them.
That's why I'm talking to you, because there are political implications for this. There's dollar implications, because all these CE providers are paying AERC to accept their courses, and it's a circle.
Right.
And so I just need some direction on, do I start filing complaints? Do I start requiring? To me, live is like going to a concert. Mm-hmm. You go to a concert for the experience, they hear the live band. I don't go to YouTube to stream a concert to listen to it. It's not the same experience. And that's the analogy that I've used with anybody that's called and asked. That's not AERC's philosophy. And that's going to extend to probably the local, the Arizona Society,
And you're missing a whole target audience of up-and-coming millennials, that this is the only way they function.
So they
can do that for 3/4 of their CEUs.
Yeah, but I think
they're just saying there's a small portion. You got to show up.
Go to a conference.
They can't, right?
So are we defining live as in person?
Is that what you need? That's sort of like
I don't think you can say in person because the spirit of your rule specifically says except for live courses or activities completed online. So when you guys crafted this rule, you were making room for live stream.
And knowing that there are people that live rurally, I mean, their access
to live courses is... So are we saying the definition of live would be in person and or live stream?
Yes, that it's up to the board. This is why we're having this discussion. If that is acceptable,
that is live.
But I don't think watching a pre-recorded
webinar,
that is an online CEU, in my opinion.
Okay, so I guess the board can direct staff to work on a substantive policy statement to clarify that definition, and then we can bring that back for approval.
I mean, isn't that already written, frankly? I mean, we're already
you have no definition of live in your rules or statutes. It just says live courses, a licensee may have completed online.
These companies are using that to try to get around it, and like you said, there's some political implications.
The term live is ambiguous at best here because these companies are calling it live, even though it's not.
What we're looking for is an online meeting or including video conferencing capabilities and not a pre-recorded message with some chat feature.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you go to try to buy a car and you're like, hey, how much does this car cost? And they're like, well, I can't really tell you, but you can send someone down and we'll help you out. And that's not what we're looking for.
I think we need some kind of definition that says in-person or
online
live stream, not pre-recorded.
Yep.
Online meeting, video conferencing capabilities.
Somebody that if you ask the question, I can see them answer.
Okay, so
that helps.
Let me just get a little clarification here. So in person or live stream,
video conferencing,
or video conferencing.
In person webinar.
I believe the term that we're specifically looking for is online meeting. So it's a meeting of multiple individuals at the same time through some type of technology platform.
WebEx or whatever.
Yeah, WebEx, GoToMeeting, Google Chat.
Online meeting / video conferencing, a live stream or in person, not pre-recorded.
With interactive capabilities.
Let me work with Jack to bring something back to you guys. Interactive is great. Let me work with Jack to bring you guys something at the next meeting, and we'll see if we can't clarify this for your licensees.
Okay.
But what I heard Jack say about CEUs is that most of our outliers currently are falling out because we don't have enough ethics, we don't have enough live hours.
Or they just don't realize that they need the ethics, or that they need a 10 and 5.
I can't support
the reason that the policy...
Ignorance, but... Well, that's what it
is. We're giving them essentially a little... You know how we gave them that 6-month grace period at the beginning of this policy? They're getting a little bit of a mini reprieve for the people who are applying for renewal early because your statute specifically says CE gathered within your two-year licensure period. So if they submit their application 50, 60 days in advance and then they get a deficiency notice and they correct that deficiency before the license expires, they get a little bit of a reprieve, but you may possibly see something to the effect of they lied on the affidavit.
Right, because they're clicking a button that says at the time of my renewal.
And that's different. That's submitting false information to the board. But
Can we clarify the differences? So is the issue at hand the violation they did all CEUs online, or is the issue at hand that they were audited, they didn't meet the necessary requirements and through like hours? Or is it that they met all the requirements, they just didn't meet the 5 hours being conducted in person?
Unfortunately, it's all of the above.
Yep.
But what I'm seeing the most is that somebody that applies for renewal last week, audit letter comes out 4 to 5 days after that. Is that fair, Kathy? 4 to 5 days after that. As soon as they get that audit letter, then they send in all the stuff that they have. Oh, you're short 5 hours for whatever reason. Then they're going out and getting it online and sending it in because it's still before their expiration date.
But so you knew you were short 5 hours before you clicked the button.
That's right. But the board has made a decision that that's okay.
Right. It's within the 2-year renewal period. So once again, the issue of did they lie on their affidavit is separate from did they complete their CE within their 2-year licensure period.
That is true.
So
because they technically are completing it within their 2-year licensure period if they're renewing early.
So for those people that are short, it is most likely live or ethics. Those are the two main things. So instead of going and finding a live ACLS class or a renewal or something like that, they're going the last minute CE or one of the two other ones all
call
in Texas.
It live. Mm-hmm.
And they're getting a live last minute CE course,
but it's not really
online.
Live.
Right. That's not really live, but AARC says it's live.
So we definitely need to clear up our verbiage.
I need consensus so I can start presenting. It's eventually going to become a regulatory issue, and I've already talked a little bit about with Frankie about whether or not it's enforceable. But I want to get the information out.
And the other question here is going to be, since there is no substantive policy statement right now, it has not been crafted, it has not been adopted. What is staff doing in the meantime with all of these people that seem to be confused by things that are called live but aren't being sold as live?
I think until we clarify it, we can't really hold them to that, right? Because you have all these people on here that are called live.
I think
we didn't mean it to be ambiguous, but it is. So until we clarify it, we can't really hold them to it. My licensure, I know what
it's
like. I've got to go,
yeah.
But...
So if they sign a renewal saying I have all my CE, they sign an oath saying I have all my continuing education.
That's a different issue.
It's the same issue, just you're slicing it differently. Mm-hmm. So do you want 150 regulatory? You're going to have more than that. This continues. You're going to get up in a higher
license. Because it works for their credential.
Right.
Because AARC is accepting it
right.
From a credentialing, and anybody that has to do CEs for your credential, they're totally accepted. So now their concern and their complaint
right.
is, rightfully so, if it works for the AARC, why does it work for you?
Because we have an administrative rule that says you can spend no more than 15 hours of online continuing education.
It's a new rule.
It's not a new rule anymore.
What, 2 years?
Yeah.
Pretty.
That's not new. It's been 2 years. We sent out the letters. You got the email.
So,
it's on the website.
Everybody's sent through the
We're in the grand scheme of that.
We're just struggling. I just can't believe we're here. I started audits back in, 13, 14? Random audits. We've been doing this for a long time. We changed the rules.
Yeah.
So they have, 2 hours of ethics and so forth. But we're still, the failure rate on this is just so large because we're doing 100% audits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a conscious choice. It's a decision by the licensee.
Absolutely.
About what kind of continuing education to get, when to get it, and how to get it. It is not it's not in the forefront of what they're doing. They think about it when it's time for renewal.
Yep.
Now, that's not everybody. You always have the majority that sends you the perfect CE certificates. They have 40 hours, 47 hours of great continued education.
Spaced apart throughout 2 years.
Right.
Which I would love everybody to see.
Yes. They go to it.
But the majority is not. Did we get yours yet? I need to personally review this.
It's coming your way. It's in your file.
So anyway, that's what it's
going on. Where were you following on this leniency thing for during until we get this policy or whatever it is?
The people that have truly failed, the 150, are getting consent agreements, and if they don't sign a consent agreement, they're getting a complaint filed.
I just don't agree that just because the AARC accepts it, that we automatically have to accept
it. That's not inclusive of 150.
Right,
it's like we raised the bar a little, so you can have the...
We didn't raise the bar, they created an exception. Just to clarify. It's not the same thing.
So it's no different than the CMS and the Drug Commission, right? Let's see. Medicare sets the basic standards for what hospitals have to do. Right? The Drug Commission comes in and raises those standards just a little bit to say, nope, you now have to do this. So it's no different than your credential versus your licensure. The challenge I'm having with, though, is that when we put forth this rule 2 years ago, we did not provide a definition for what live means.
Correct.
And I do agree with Dr. Easley that until we substantiate...
They're passing. So, I'm not failing the people that have a certificate from AARC that says traditional on it. even though I don't personally agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So those people are passing. 150 aren't in that group.
Thank God. They're the ones that are saying, I had my CEUs, but then I'm telling you
for the proactively trying to say, board, this is probably going to be a problem. It is a problem. We need to address it. That's why I wanted the consensus to move forward.
So we need to vote.
So thank you for that discussion. I appreciate it.
Okay.
We'll bring you back something, hopefully, by the next meeting.
Okay.
What else do we have? You don't need to do that today unless there's any dying need to hear any reports. Okay. Did you see all the customer satisfaction surveys? I included them, it was like right last night, I think, about 10 o'clock. Because the audit, one thing the audits have done is they've created a lot of customer interaction, and we are getting more customer satisfaction surveys back than we ever have before, and some of it's really good feedback.
I don't see it.
You don't see any of that?
No. Mm-hmm. No. But we believe you.
Well, that's good. You would be No, overall, they've been, we're still excellent. We haven't gotten any unsatisfactory in a while. But we had like 30-some surveys come in within the last month, which is what we normally get in a year. I don't really have anything else unless there's questions.
I have a draft that Frank needs to look at
before.
Okay, so that's
can we table that, please?
What policy is that?
When you fail to respond to the letter we sent in.
Okay.
I can't think of it. What did I forget? I think the only outstanding thing we have is that policy from last month.
Can I make a recommendation?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For items to be placed on future agenda.
No, we're not there yet.
I was going to say, can we turn the air down?
Can you hold it?
Did we call it?
It's at 67 degrees.
You asked. So the question was, can we turn the air down in here? The air conditioner is on a central system. We cannot manipulate it. It has to be turned down by DOA. So the last couple of meetings, we sent emails asking to turn it down. They've done it one or two meetings. They've done it all meetings. So.
Thank you for that current event.
Yes. Okay. Are you set with
3E?
Anything else in
3E? I don't think so.
All right, we're going to move to 3F, which is call to the public. And a call to the public is when you out there are given 5 minutes to speak about something, should you choose to, keeping in mind that we cannot have any conversation with you because that has not been placed on the agenda. So if anyone would like to say something, now is the opportunity. Call to the public is also where we as a board ask you guys sitting out there what you took away from today. So I'll ask
Not everybody at once.
Right, we have a hand. Are you a call to the public or just answering the question?
I don't know, I'm a call to the public, I guess.
Can you just say your name on the record and then we can speak?
My name's Lynette Ponder. Don't write that down. I have a question about live CEUs, and I know it's not apples to oranges, but you know, the nursing, they don't have to get CEUs, but they do have to work. And I don't think we have to work. But I think there's a big difference. If you're working full-time about, you know, I don't know how you arrived at the live CEUs, but a lot of us working, we get our live CEUs right there at work. But I think there's something to be considered about if you're working full-time or even part-time, you know, why the live CEUs, I wonder why the big difference between nursing versus respiratory. But the only other couple things I'm curious about is everybody practicing on this board, and how do you get on this board?
So they can't answer any questions, but you director.
I'm going to take them in reverse order. So the board is comprised of seven total board members. Of those, we have to have 3 licensed respiratory therapists, There's no, not necessarily requirement for practicing. You have to be licensed. We have one administrator, and then we have one physician member and two public members. So that's kind of the composition. The practicing part is not a requirement in statute or rule.
And in education. College.
Right. That's one of the three I said it was a respiratory therapist. So we have to have one educator, which is a respiratory therapist. In order to apply for a board position, it's a governor's appointment. So the Governor Ducey has a website. It's called the Boards and Commissions website. You can go to that website. You can submit an electronic application for not only this board, but any other health-related board. The governor makes the decision on who's appointed to this board and who is not. The application will require three references when you submit it. And I always tell anybody that emails me or talks to me that it's a political process. So if you have references that are of political nature that might help you with a board appointment, you should consider that. It's not mandatory, but it's a political process. Board appointments are for 3 years, and a board member can be here no more than 2 consecutive terms. So no more than 6 years if they're consecutive terms. What is the live part? Was that your question?
Is there any compensation?
Board members are, and I'm laughing because it's a question. Board members are compensated in the amount of $30 per day. $30 per day. Of course, as a state agency, we take taxes out of that.
So at the end of the day, we owe money.
So it's essentially a volunteer type of thing. But a board member in any agency, there's a lot of boards and commissions, is a very integral and important part of the process. Boards make decisions on policy, on rules, live education, that sort of thing. They make regulatory decisions on cases, whether or not to discipline somebody. And it happens for every industry. The nursing board, osteopathic board, the medical board, the MDs. A lot of the health professions have a board. So you can serve on a board. It doesn't necessarily have to be this one, but that's the process. But don't expect a lot of compensation for a board or the state in general. So it's the way it is. You have to have a passion for it. You have to choose to do it. So did I answer your question?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know who's practiced, who hasn't. I mean, in all respect, there seem to be a couple inappropriate questions to the people up here that, you know, that didn't quite make sense to me, and I didn't know who knew a lot about respiratory and who doesn't.
I appreciate that feedback. Is this the first time you've been to a board meeting?
It is.
What do you think about the process?
I guess I'm still processing it, but like I said, I heard a couple of indiscretions that I've been doing this 40 years, and I haven't worked at a place where I change trades. There's only a couple rehab places that I know of that I would have ever had that opportunity. And that the guy that only had like 2 years in the field, I mean, a couple things were missed, I thought, with him. He made it crystal clear he was working towards being a therapist in the unit, and yet he was still a, you know,
So that's why continuing competency, continuing education is so important. And it goes to your question. Do you think that somebody, not necessarily that individual, but anybody, could get the kind of education necessary if they did it all online?
No, because I think it's all attained on the job. Almost every job I have, I'm a nurse as well, is attained by on the job working.
So I think that was part of the reasoning for the live CE, is that you are in a situation where there's interaction, you can ask questions, it could be a doctor that's presenting, it could be somebody that's an expert in the field, in front of a large group out at the Arizona Society of Respiratory Care summer meeting. You know, there's a lot of opportunities for education in a live setting. Is it always going to be that way? I don't know. Could it change? Yes. But 2 years ago, when you get 20 hours, and take this with a grain of salt, when you get 20 hours from passing year, then all done the day before their renewal, as a regulator, you have to question what kind of quality continuing education they get. 20 hours all in one day, the day before they renewed their license. That's not the purpose of continuing education. So if somebody's doing that, I would question whether or not it's good continuing education.
Hence the difference between nursing and respiratory, that they have to be working, and we don't necessarily have to be working. That's not a rule, right? You don't have to be employed.
No.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know how they arrived at no CEUs, and I'm not fighting either way. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to get the live CEUs, but I think you can cheat when you're when you really have a will. You can cheat.
You cheat until you get caught.
Right.
I've been doing this for a long time,
and also,
I can tell you eventually you get caught.
One other thing is, you know, the training that you get when you start in a hospital, it's almost negligible. I mean, I've sat in front of a manual, you know, and looked through the policies of a hospital, but, you know, you better know how to suction before you start. And if you don't, hopefully you're asking how to suction and how to do certain procedures. But anyway, that's all.
Great feedback. Thank you very much. And I'm glad you came down to the meeting.
Yeah.
You get some live continuing education.
Absolutely.
Right? Free.
I needed them.
anybody else? Any else have questions, comments? Yes?
The question is also in line with the live CEUs. I heard you say that quality was a concern when you brought up the live CEUs. My concern is, how are we vetting, and I'm glad you discussed that, how are we vetting that the live CEUs are actually bringing about quality? I'm thinking, from my perspective, that live is just bringing on requirements like that. When they're in prison, you're interactive. But interaction does not determine quality. Because I asked a couple of questions, I mean, I have learned something as much different from what I would learn as a webinar.
I don't think I ever said quality.
And just as a point to you, the board doesn't vet the actual continuing education. If you look inside your rules, you should be familiar with Rule 209, which tells you what agencies the board has approved to provide that education. They don't actually look at each course and evaluate it. But these providers have been previously approved by boards and hospitals and other providers. And that's really all we look at is it recognized by one of these 23 organizations.
I think I'm just trying to understand.
So ACLS, NRP, and PALS. Okay. Those are commonly accepted continuing education. Can you do those online?
No.
Why do you have to do them in person? Because,
yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and that's the majority of, a lot of people do ACLS, PALS, and NRP as their CE, one time in 2 years. So I don't think our requirements are stringent by any rule. You know, but that's why it's live. The live is that kind of thing. So, and again, my example was 20 hours online from an online, you know, vent manufacturer or something, the day before your renewal, is not good at continuing education. How can you do 20 hours of continuing education in one day? You're sitting there watching a video for 20 hours? I mean, let's get realistic about that.
I think our call to public has exceeded our 5 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's devolving.
It is devolving.
Oh,
okay, so we are going to move on to G, and that would be items to be placed on future agenda, and Alan wants the air turned down. Anything else, board members?
Yeah, was there another item that needed to be reviewed? No?
Well, we're going to review the policy regarding definition of live.
Right. And the other policy.
And the other
those will stay updated as executive director report. Okay, then we are adjourned.
Roll call.
We're not adjourned. Take it back. Took it back.
Someone wants to go.
Okay, when I call your name, let me know that you're still here, okay? Donna. Ferry.
Here.
Larry McGowan.
Here.
Carmen Vertigo.
We're here.
Steve Reichel. Kim Krepp. Mark Uzawa.
Here.
Alana Lefsred. Lindsay Soderberg. Kathy Seidman. Julie Higgins. Connie Bachelman. Richard Turner. Francisca Robles Reyes.
Here.
Ihira?
Here.
Devin Johnson.
Here.
Ryan Welker. Lynette Hines. Genevieve.
She was
on the agenda. And so was Michael Montessa.
Yep.
Ivan Perez. Cherise Thor.
Here.
Rebecca Wall. Amber Rodriguez.
Here.
Lorleen Stewart. Jennifer Delap. Jamie Sindel. Joseph Schoen. Crystal Barraza. Carla Kaplan. Tashina Yazzie. Jennifer Lekowski. Michael Fitzgerald. Annette Lindell. Anthony Childers. Tabitha Ramirez. Justin Stewart. Matthew Jones.
Who was on the agenda?
Shirley Coughlin. Robert Sims. Alyssa Hoffman. Michael Montero. Michael? No Michael?
No.
Okay.
All right. Now the meeting's been adjourned. Go for it.
I was waiting for somebody else to get in there.
Leslie, you got your form signed?
Yeah.